Just as we indicated to the department represented and organizations that we expect them to reply to the questions that were asked, but we may also have left and therefore what proposed actually have asked. It is okay to ask it, send it through us so that it is part of the process so that we can communicate to the department and people who are here today, so that they can respond to these comments. The reason we say so is that it becomes part of the process of what we are doing here. We realize that sometimes, in fact, we didn't have enough time to have as much engagement with the people who have presented to us as we could. So please remember, you can still do that, member. Not only that, but also comments as well. Is it okay to give us your comments about what struck me, what you meant yesterday, so that we put it in here. Members, we will now start. Minister, welcome. We appreciate your presence. Like I said yesterday to the ministers who came, this public consideration of issues is an important part of what we do as parliament. You would have handled these issues elsewhere, but this is where we do it in public so that we can engage with the issues that we raise as much as we can. The PG, we hope we will find time in the different committees that we belong to invite you and your team or separate and so on, because your area is also cross-cutting in a very significant way. So thank you for coming, and this is your test. Thanks.
Thank you, Chairperson, and members of this important ad hoc Committee on Service Delivery. Ladies and gentlemen, honorable members, you would know that the primary responsibility of the Department of Energy is to drive the agenda of eradicating energy policy, that means poverty, amongst our people and the community as a whole. The security of supply of energy sources is crucial. Accessible and affordable energy sources is one of the areas which we are also focusing on. In short, the Department of Energy is the lifeline of the oxygen of socio-economic development in South Africa. In brief, our mandate has a direct bearing on local government and can be summarized as follows. Like I indicated, to attain universal access to electricity for all, this is being realized through the Integrated National Electrification Program, which is referred to as INEP. This, Chairperson, includes both budget allocations to municipalities and to ESCOM, and also the critical monitoring and evaluation function, which is coordinated by the Department of Energy. Efforts are being made on delivery, on ensuring that we can deliver on a commitment by ensuring that our people have access to some form of free basic electricity in partnership with municipalities and ESCOM, and I indicated that the budget is with municipalities and ESCOM. Through our integrated energy center, we are striving towards ensuring that our rural and poor communities have access to all forms of energy services and products. Our petroleum licensing division, in its consideration of the wholesale and retail sector licensing, takes into account the geographic considerations and accessibility of resources to the wider spectrum of our people. Based on this, a short synopsis of challenges we are faced with, we are outlining here, in particular with respect to the electrification and pre-basic services. In the country, Chairperson, we've got a big challenge. If we have to talk about tariffs. And in this instance, I would remind all of us about the statement made by the President of the Republic on the occasion of the 98th anniversary of the ANC, when he was addressing the nation as President of the ANC, indicating that the challenge of energy in our country is not just about tariffs. But in this instance, I just wanted to remind us that we've got issues related to the tariff, in particular because it is that particular issue that is in the public domain. We have a situation where in the country we've got about more than 2,000 different types of servers. And it creates huge inequalities across the system, and I believe that the HDC and the other members that are meeting from the department will be able to elaborate on that. We have a situation where you have almost like in 1 month for the area, 33 cents per kilowatt hour, and in another one, 71 cents per kilowatt hour. If you look at the challenges faced by the different consumers and households, especially if you look at the low levels of income that our people are also exposed to, if you look at the challenges of SME development, you then have a situation where the SMEs in one area pay this amount of money and another area a different level. In relation to the basic electricity, there is a major consensus that the current rollout covers less than 40% of targeted communities. This is because you find that in the rural areas in particular, our people are still expected to go to a particular center to pick up the token. And if you don't have money for transport, you then have a challenge to get to the point of collecting the token. But the biggest problem of them all is you have the number of households that are still in informal settlements, or alternatively situations where we are unable to connect because our program is either running faster than that one of human settlement. This is something that I will address later because you know that we're working together with the Department of Human Settlement to make sure that we can address the issue of the wiring or making sure that the services are able to move faster. On electrification rollout, we're progressing fairly well in certain municipalities, while in others implementation is very slow. This is as a result of varying technical capabilities and certain instances, lack of financial or lack of technical expertise, I wanted to say. We have also agreed with some of the municipalities that the department would settle or support them with the technical expertise that is necessary to make sure that the rollout can be accelerated. Chairperson, we've got one of the issues that we would want the service delivery ad hoc committee to really focus on, and it's the issue related to municipal distribution infrastructure. We're also saying that it is important that we make it possible within this process of engaging with municipalities and provinces that we can further elaborate and discuss between the portfolio committee or advise the portfolio committee on justice as well as the portfolio committee on energy and COPTA to be able to make it possible that we can accelerate the process of the adoption through or tabling through the House the 17th Amendment Bill that would make it possible that we can establish the regional electricity distribution services. This is very important in particular because if you look at the network in the infrastructure in municipalities, they are at different or varying degrees, and there are big challenges in ensuring that we can meet the backlog. One of the challenges is the issue of our faster rollout of the new electrification or the new connections vis-a-vis the decaying infrastructure that we need to be able to address. So those are some of the things that I believe that the portfolio committee of energy and COPTA in particular will be able to help that whole committee on. On issues related to the IEC, which is the Integrated Energy Center, which is one of the key points at which communities, especially in rural areas, can access one form of energy source together. In particular, if they could be able to access the tokens for electricity, but also to be able to have access to kerosene, petrol, or whatever source of energy that they would need. We have been having serious challenges in terms of a faster rollout of the integrated energy center because the department doesn't have a budget for the integrated energy center, and we have to rely on the oil companies to the partners to the department to be able to roll out the centers. And it's one of the areas that we believe that we need to also address going forward. But in particular, to make sure that we can sustain these energy centers, because already when we had some of them, they started closing down because you would know that the challenges of the distances in some of our areas. I believe that Capitol, this was just a summary of the standard points that would be contained in the presentation. And I would like to take this opportunity to thank the ad hoc committee for having considered the Department of Energy as one of the key service delivery related departments to come and make a presentation to the committee. Thank you very much.
Thank you very much, my name is Ms. Kim Mokoban. I'm the Director General of the Department of Energy, and I'm going to tell you. Thank you very much, Chairperson. I will take you through this, the details of what the management has already touched on. Basically, she has touched on all the issues that are very crucial for this department. And without a doubt, energy is the lifeblood of the country's economy. And it's also very, very central in improving the quality of life. And as you probably all are aware, almost all the 8 Millennium Goals are not going to be achieved unless we've got affordable energy for the country. The recall of Millennium Goals include eradication of poverty, improving primary education. One of the issues that is quite important is that level is making sure that if every rural area has access at least to some digital form of communication in order to improve the education system. Also trying to improve on the health, et cetera. So those are the issues that we simply believe that we need then therefore to ensure that we have energy security. In other words, we must not just have energy, but it must also be continuous.
You correctly observed that the minister touched on the issues. Yes, also said it in a in choosing what you focus on,
yes,
so that you spare yourself enough time for insights and discussions.
Okay.
So please just help us to summarize the key issues and then we'll engage.
Okay. In this presentation, we are going to touch on the licensing curriculum product, in other words, how much we have done today in the establishment of the integrated energy center and also the electricity of our four clinics and schools, including off-grid energy. Now, in terms of the electrification program, our intervention in this case is the planning, the funding, and also to make sure that we monitor the implementation by implementing agencies, that is ESCOM and 187 municipalities. Because I've been asked to go quickly, this is just an electricity value chain, which I would indicate that in a number of areas that where ESCOM and the municipalities are involved. Now, if I can just go to the performance of the electrification program from 2002 to 2009, you will see from the slide that cumulatively we have managed to electrify at least about almost 1.4 million households. However, what is important to note in this slide is that the number of connections per year has been declining steadily. The reason being we are now trying to ensure that in line with the rural development, we move into rural areas and create infrastructure not just for the household use, but also to ensure that we're able to encourage some of the farming and the rural development. And the next slide basically shows you one of the indicators that we are having a now 8 decline in the number of household connections. Now, what is our criteria of allocating these just resources? Our criteria is to look at how much backlog do we have. In other words, the three provinces that are in the region of the Kabura, that is KwaZulu-Natal, Eastern Cape, and Limpopo, are actually having the highest amount of backlog. So whenever we allocate funds, we always try and make sure that those three provinces receive the funds of the infrastructure, sometimes close to 60%. And of course, as I mentioned, the rural bias, because you recall that these are the areas which never had infrastructure before. And also we try as much as we can to make money available for formal settlements and also for the bulk infrastructure, and also to make sure that in areas where they already housing, either planned or already developed, those are the areas that we usually service into. And also the past performance specifically at municipal level. This is always a chicken and egg situation, because most of the time the municipalities that perform badly usually are the ones who have under resourced. So it's one of the key areas that we need to look into in the future. Now, in terms of the NTEF allocation, we have put the slide up because we wanted to indicate what we have right now in relation to what we need to achieve in future. What we have right now on the NTEF allocation won't be able to make operation without access by 2012 on the former household as we originally planned. And that is the area which we really need to make sure then that we prioritize those areas where there was the lowest number of connections. In other words, if the municipality has got less than 5,000 households that are not electrified, those are the areas that we are targeting right now. In terms of the national backlog, what we have here in terms of provinces, how badly or how well are we doing? At the moment, we are referring to a situation where we've got 75% electrified houses. Most of you are going to say that this is not the same what we have seen as being done by ZSA. What is excluded here is your high income housing development, where we don't put money in. What we're looking here is areas where government has put money in. So in terms of those areas, government has only been able to achieve 75%. And again, you also realize that areas like Gauteng, with the highest number of informal settlements, that's where they have the highest number of settlers. In terms of the performance the municipality, as shown in Table 6, you will realize that in 2008-09, this has always been a general trend, but it's improving as you see. You see that at the end of the financial year, only 85% of what was targeted was achieved. And that shows you the number of policies that they managed to achieve at the end of the 31st of December 2009. It's only 40,000. Connection as opposed to 48,000. And then in terms of 2009-2010 program, the performance so far has not been encouraging. We are only sitting at about 68% performance, that is in December 2009, and we only have only 3 months. So this area is an area of concern for us, and we are working quite closely with municipalities to try and make sure that we improve this kind of performance. And then in terms of ESCOM performance program, when I refer to ESCOM performance program, I refer to those areas that are supplied by ESCOM, although they are within municipalities. As I mentioned, we've got 187 municipalities that supply electricity directly to their own consumers. There we've got the rest being supplied by ESCOM. So in other words, ESCOM is basically providing services on their behalf. So in this particular case, on the 2008 and 2009 financial year, they had managed to do about 91%, of which they were able to only complete around June 2009. And they were able to electrify about 72,500 households. But on the 2009 term performance again, everybody without fail seemed not to be as well as we had preferred, and hence therefore we are going to be doubling our efforts to make sure that the performance improves quite drastically. Now, in terms of the overall challenges, at the moment, the overall challenges are, among others, limited program funding. And also, we need then therefore to be able to say to ourselves, how can we maximize the funds that we have, and hopefully we should be able to get something in the future to try and look at more accelerated electrification program, especially in areas where we already have formal households. And also the building of new bus infrastructure to rural areas. This is quite a challenge, which also, again, where we spend most of our money to make sure that there is adequate network. Because some of the people have complained that you have infrastructure, you have electricity, but the quality of the service is so poor. And therefore, that's why we need to make sure that we strengthen the bus infrastructure. And the issue that is also a big challenge, which also needs a separate presentation on the call, is the issue of the maintenance of infrastructure that already needs a mention. It is quite important that even for new connections, the existing infrastructure needs to be up to scratch in order to be able to make sure that we add more people, especially in urban areas. So when the infrastructure is in bad shape, then we have serious challenges with not only just the access to the infrastructure, but also making sure that the service is provided. And also the capacity to implement some of the projects. We seem to be having quite a lot of challenge around capacity. We even had, as a department, we had to at least deploy about 100 technicians in various municipalities to try to improve not just implementation, but also making sure that the electrification program forms part of the broader municipal IDP, because electricity is not a service. They are at least then therefore to be in line with what the municipality is planning. And also the issue around the structure planning approach. We are still not there yet with the planning approach. We do find places where we will put on the plan that there is going to be housing, and somehow it doesn't happen. But sometimes the housing happens elsewhere. So you find that you have housing, but the service is not there. So we still need to make sure that we improve in that structure approach. And the next couple of slides, I think, just indicate what has been achieved since 1994. So since 1994, 4.5 million households have been electrified. And we intend to ensure that all three are electrified by June 2010. Initially, we set marks, but we just need to make sure that we do our proper audit to together with the Department of Basic Education, especially to make sure that all the schools are electrified. And what we have done also in areas like in Lamakoi, just one example, where we had to interview, because the infrastructure not only was it in bad shape, but also it was beginning to pose danger to the community. So we had to also intervene. And we are finding ourselves more and more spending money that is earmarked for electrification to try and improve the infrastructure. And in terms of the clinics, we have managed to achieve universal access. In terms of the interventions that we intend to do, we are in full support of the local government turnaround strategy, and we are going to be participating in this. We also are going to be participating, working very closely together, as mentioned, with senior settlements, not only just to make sure that we align our plans, but also to ensure any deficiency in housing, because we're of the view that we can actually intervene positively if we are able to have energy efficient housing and also providing other alternative energy sources. And also, there is a view that we still need to maintain the municipal access program, where we've been putting people that are in municipalities that are technically trained. If I can just run quickly to the Office of the Petroleum Controller. One of the issues, one of the things that we had to do as a department was to amend the Petroleum Products Act in 2003 to ensure then that also the issues of the liquid fuel charter are included. This is also something that we're going to be discussing later, because the liquid fuel charter will be 10 years this year. Therefore, we need to review it and look at the lessons learned and also what is going to be the way forward. Now, in this area, our mandate is basically to advocate over the processing of retail, wholesale and manufacturing retail applications of prospective and petroleum operators through its licensing division. We are also responsible for compliance, monitoring and enforcement of those licenses. The license division issues licenses in accordance with the provisions of the Act, the Petroleum Amendment Act. And the license that is issued is valid for as long as the license complies with the conditions of the license, and also the license continues to operate and ensure that the activity is a going concern. And a license could be received owing to a number of reasons. One, the business operation could be deemed economically unviable, or if it's not compliant with the ACSA requirement, ACSA for the product which are running South African, but also if it's if what they're applying for still maintains medical integration. In other words, where you have a situation where the wholesale and the retail activities are all in one license. And also, if it's not in compliance with other laws, including national, provincial, and local laws. There are currently approximately 15,135 license applications. And today, 6,027 have been granted. And the ones that have been issued, 5,484. The difference between the two is that the other one could have been granted, but so far the person has not received the actual license. And then the one that has been received is 483, and therefore the date was the process over 12,000. Now, what challenges do we have in this area? The biggest challenge here is the issue of the oil company and franchise agreement. There is still that area where we need to tighten up in order to ensure that whoever is running the site is actually protected. Also, we are saying that in terms of service delivery improvement, we are going to make sure then that we improve our process making and engineering processes in order to ensure that whatever is outstanding in terms of licenses is all in process. The one thing, and then in future, we want to make sure that our time doesn't exceed more than 90 working days in terms of granting the license. And then in terms of the compliance and monitoring and enforcement, this area, what we are supposed to do is to ensure that the operators have the applicable licenses. We need to ensure that there is correct labeling on the fuel pump. We need to ensure that we are using the correct fuel specification. We need to ensure that correct fuel prices are displayed, and also we need to ensure that every regulation, especially otherwise in compliance. This area we need to confess that you are still on the ground as we speak, and one of the areas that we need to improve. But also, we might need to amend the Act in order to be able to make sure that we protect those who are actually not in compliance with the law. With regards to the integrated energy center, the integrated energy center really was to try and bring energy to the people. So in other words, we need to ensure that those who are at a spread away in the rural areas are able to receive energy in the cheapest possible manner. And the idea here was to make sure that these energy centers also provide information around the safety of these energy sources, because as we all know, any energy source can be dangerous if not used. Now, we need then to therefore make sure that we roll out as many as we can. And also, what we have liked to see local communities in the form of cooperatives run these energy centers. At this point in time, the oil companies and some private sector players have been very instrumental in making sure that this energy center takes off, as the minister already indicated. Now, what we are looking at now is to try and look at which ones we have. Which ones we have at the moment? You see there the list of various provinces. The idea here was that to just focus to the original nodal zone, because nodal zone had been identified as areas with the lowest development. In terms of the challenges that we have as a city, sometimes the lack of financial and business management skills, and also sometimes the compliance with the government legislation that is cooperating with, and also the lack of funding for this IEC, and sometimes also we do put ourselves in the food as government departments when we take a little bit longer for EIA approval, and also the issue around land ownership is still a difficult challenge. In terms of intervention for the IEC, the idea here is that let's have the national state oil company, PetroSA, playing a leading role. If I might add also here is that with the discussion around the electricity tariff, it is our view that we need therefore to diversify energy sources. So in other words, we need to ensure then that any sources like LPG is made affordable and brought closer to the people, and we thought that our stakeholder enterprise can play a leading role in making sure that we improve the distribution channels for LPGs in order for us to be able to make it as accessible to as many people as possible. And also we're looking at the continuous engagement with the oil companies as part of their social responsibility, corporate social responsibility. And of course we're still exploring finding through the system. I thank you.
Thank you very much. Member, are there people from Contralela? Peter, your friend. Are there people from Contralela here? Yeah. Oh, you are? Okay, alright. Just wanted to check it. Trying to look at the relationship between energy and Contralela. I wanted to see you physically, but there is a relationship that we talk about, but let's not go there now. We will have a discussion now, quickly. Peter Smith, Medicare ID. I'm starting on my left wing. Yes, I don't know if there. This is Parliament. Start on the left and then go to the right. Outside, I start on the left. Yes, no. Yeah, okay. She's looking at some of these slides. I'm trying to understand the figures. If, for example, you look on slide 11, you've got the census allocation criteria. And then if you look at the criteria and compare them to the funds actually allocated for spending, I'm not sure about the key relationship always. For example, take slide 13. And here you get a place, for example, like a Western Cape and North West, and a similar background. And if you look at the subsequent budget, the amount allocated for those provinces is roughly the same. And you'd expect that. They each have a 200,000 backlog, and they each get 40, 50 million, whatever the figure is, in the next couple of years. It's fine. But then there are other instances where the discrepancy is very large, and that's what I'm getting. My question is, why is there such a big discrepancy consistently, say, between the Eastern Cape and KZN, where they both are rural? You'd think the allocation criteria would be very similar. They're both rural, they're both got huge backlogs, and yet the Eastern Cape budget allocations are vastly above those KZN. Right through the talk largely of Epsom, where there's a bit of a catch up. But for all the other allocations, it's way below. So that's my question. Is there a consistent application of this criteria across the board? Then I'm looking at slide 17, which deals with municipal performance, and it's quite scary, the mismatch between the funds actually allocated and the amount that have been transferred to date and spent as a percentage of those transfers. Now, the percentage of what's transferred is not the average world, but the percentage of what's been allocated, the figures are really, really bad. I mean, it's quite scary to think that you can be allocated, you know, 123 million and you only spend 26, or you're allocated, 80 and you spend 10. These figures are really problematic, I think. So, and there's also a subsequent slide which deals with municipal performance. The target and the actual delivery is so far apart, unbelievable. I mean, Eastern Cape is meant to be 8,300 connections with 75. KZN is 16,000 and 1,000. So my question here would be, is there actually also a match between the budget and the capacity to spend those budgets? It seems to me that there are large budgets being put forward, not taking into account the ability to spend it. I'm not quite sure that's correct or not. Now, I know that the department did acknowledge the capacity constraints in this level, but I would think that one would take those into account in taking the budget to start with. But, because I think she also mentioned, I think that there are hundreds, like technical people there, taking incentives to help them. But it doesn't seem to be 100 technicians are going to make much of a dent in those figures. And then lastly, just a question. I know it's not the all and end all of this discussion, but I would think it's relevant somewhere. And that is on the issue of tariffs. We already, on the basis of our existing tariffs and the inability to free basics to cover the need, we already have a quite a serious problem with some of the tariffs of the legal connection. Now, there's a case, the article came last week, which is basically arguing that you rate me nothing yet. Once the new tariff increases come through, those illegal connections are going to skyrocket. And also the volume will be too, actually, because the poor are being cut. But my question would be, what is the department's response to that problem in connection with the delivery range of these people?
Thank you, Chair. Let me start with the good. I would like to commend the Department of Energy about the IEC. And I'm very, very much relieved, Chair, to hear the Minister saying they would improve the plan, because I am from that area, and I would like to say it helps a lot, not especially in Mushawi and Kalahat. So I'm waiting for more stuff. Then, the thing that I want to say, unattended cables, electric cables.
they're still causing some problems in most areas. And then the meter reading, I know that you mentioned the Eskom, but I agree that maybe in your meetings or whatever, we have a problem in our area that the meter reading is not properly done. We don't know whether we're using average reading or the legal tools to help the home. If that can be please attended to. And the last thing you mentioned, rural problems, Mpumalanga and KZN as the most rural. I think Northwest is 75% rural, and to be included in the two. Thank you, Chairperson.
Thank you, Chairperson. Chairperson, from my side, looking at the presentation, as you say, it starts with a wonderful soundbite that energy is the blood of the economy. And one really wonders with the allocation of money to the respective municipalities and also the distribution of the infrastructure, whether the electricity is accessible or affordable. Now, Chair, most of the revenue source of municipalities are generated from energy. Now, I'm coming from the Northwest province, very rural province, and 80% of the municipalities there, their revenue are generated from electricity because of the mines in that province. I think that we cannot allow the situation where municipalities only get money from the mines in terms of electricity. My question to the ministry is, how many municipalities are actually generating money, the bulk of their money from energy? Eskom is selling to the various municipalities. NERSA is approving left, right, and center the increase in electricity. At the end of the day, the municipalities are selling to the end consumer. The regulators have no right to dictate to the end consumer, to the municipality, as to what price they can charge. So, actually, our people are in charge of absorbing fees when it comes to electricity, and also the fact that the regulator cannot control it. Or on the other hand, you'll find, as it's been mentioned, that SMMEs and other consortiums is buying electricity, bulk electricity, on a much, much cheaper way, whereby the ordinary poor people cannot do this. It is also expected for municipalities to run. I just want to focus
on your question and then let's move to the next.
Yeah, in terms of efficiency campaigns by the municipalities when it comes to electricity, I would like to know as to whether there is any incentive for that specific municipality. And some way or the other, say, someone must come to the party as far as the conundrum is concerned and how are we going to get through this.
Okay.
You made mention of one of the topics which you are talking about, any the one-stop shop for consumers. I just want to check where are those mostly one-stop shops found and what is it in the market? Because I'm thinking this is rural areas. Is it possible that you find kerosene at 24 hours if they are kerosene? Is that monitoring? Are you able to monitor that that one-stop shop is functional and is accessible to people 24 hours? And also, I just want to check the high charges that you are having, now, like outside everyone. You made mention of the minister in his opening remarks that some cells under the same, some are 32, some are 71 kilowatts. I just want to check if I'm not exposing our poor people to the electricity. So how are we going to monitor and make it target so that everybody can have this access as people can?
Thank you.
Thank you. Thank you, Chair. Let me start by thanking the Minister and the DC for the presentation made so far. Chairperson, I would just have a question to ask short and specific terms. Maybe to just find out to what extent are municipalities able to implement the independent funds for with regards to the distribution of electricity. Then the second one is on the transformation, whether there's any transformation in this industry to make sure that the previous disadvantaged individuals are also part and parcel of the benefits from the industry. Then when looking at page 41 and the establishment of the IEC around the country, but when looking at the performance to date on page 43, Western Cape and Mpumalanga are not part. What plans are made to make sure that even those provinces, because there are things around the country, in other ways, all the provinces are being catered for, but Western Cape and Mpumalanga are not part of the performance to date.
Good MP. If a province can crisp and brief in your question, that's a good MP.
The first is just to check whether the slide that says that all schools should have been electrified by June this year, we are actually confirming it, so that we don't go on out here and say things and we're not able to do it. The second is most problems that are there on the ground emanate from Harris City. Communities demonstrating to say the thought that we will electrify the area and it can't happen. And the issue becomes between the department, ESCOM, and the municipality, is there any reconciliation of this problem in advance so that by the time these are within the IDP, it's a short case almost that it will be implemented, so we don't have demonstrations that we will see from time to time. The last one, with the looming percentage increase by ESCOM, and probably will affect the indigenous households, and by now it's standing at 50, almost 50 kilos per hour in indigenous. Are we going to be increasing that? Because most of the households who qualify found that they can't travel distances. So the amount of transport is higher than the amount of electricity that are going to be receiving. So now it means they will be encouraged to go for that electricity. There's not going to be any increase in that regard.
Also, very good. Honorable Mishwana.
Thanks, and I will outlast your good emphasis. Gentlemen, two brief questions. As I bring it to put us at the same time, I look at the national development and I appreciate that there are percentages to the only 16. And I know that we have two provinces with 84 and 40%, which is high, such that can we get some sort of a commitment that we could get more, so close to balance, so that we don't, this situation does not remain, that people have a big percentage. So what if we look at the numbers and the amount that they can consider, like if we look at the percentages, perhaps there can be some changes in this country. Secondly, where can we get assurance that the energy house, if I recall, is that we move to maybe solar system for users and all this, so that we use the funds well, thank you.
Let me piggyback on your question and say, in the challenges that you mentioned, I was expecting to hear you talk about the case of maintaining renewable energy as a challenge. Since it is not there, it's just you're very optimistic and confident that you will be able to.
Just to flag something that the colleague has mentioned, the impending ten part, clearly this story is not going to end here, but yesterday we were actually told that whatever percentage the municipalities get, at least 6 or 7% is going to be high. country right now. So it must be aligned to the fact that it's not going to be an easy problem for the real people who are concerned about it. We need to watch that one. The other thing, this is constraints on the budget that we have. We have infrastructure renewal and replacement. That's a big one. And of course, we have to do the new coming. But how do we see our balancing this off? Because we cannot let the infrastructure deteriorate, otherwise, it gets even more once we have to bring new power.
Thank you, Chairperson. My question is very short. According to the presentation, it still says that there are challenges facing the integrated energy center. The sustainability is a key because there is no funding. Now, my question is because some of the stakeholders are not considering their role or their responsibility. My question is whether or there is some sort of a memorandum of agreement with those stakeholders so that it binds them to carry their responsibility.
I think we've made huge strides in electrification. And because I come from Human Settlements Portfolio Committee, housing is obviously a priority. And up until now, we had a very uncoordinated approach. So people have gone into housing and been a long time before they can switch to the electricity thing. But I think the breaking new ground is going to assist us now because we are going in with infrastructure first before we do the housing. I want to just ask you, as far as the municipalities go, you mentioned there that we had poor performance between 2008-09 and 2009-10. And I see in your interventions, you talk about support to municipalities related to performance monitoring. I would just like to know, how carefully you're monitoring so that you don't get to a situation where you get to the end of a period and then you only start picking it up. And then just also my other question, skilled electrical engineers at municipalities, I think are going to be as part of the intervention to assist by placing these people there. What is the specifics about that program that you are going to be doing? Because skills in many municipalities is very important. Thank you.
Otherwise, we want to make time. Minister, TG, we want to respond quickly. You don't have to do all of them. Don't feel obliged to answer all of them. We can accept written responses, prioritize, we understand, because we just want you to get a sense of the issues you are raising and the questions that members have. Those answers will come later.
Thank you very much, Chair. I think with regard to the first question, I think what it really does for people is too much information in the slide, and hence therefore some of the issues that you are raising didn't come through. With regard to planned CAPEX for both COP and municipalities, definitely if they take the CAPEX and do receive quite a high amount, the problem is most of the time is the actual expenditure at the end. As you can see, the actual expenditure has not been commensurate with the amount of money that has been received. But what I will do then, I will just take this up and take off just in case one month, so that I can also get clearly what is it that you want me to do, so that when I respond to the correct question. With regard to the issues around maintenance, that is unattended cables, we're very, very concerned because multiple thousands of children who go playing, and then they catch this last cable. And one of the projects that we're doing at the moment is to monitor and monitor how bad that is happening, because in terms of now, even the actual death and execution, because we need to work well, we want to make sure that we have got enough motivation, other than just the blackout, enough motivation to be able to solve the funding that we need, which goes to one of the questions that was raised, how are we going to fund it? Because the figures are frightening. So it means that the normal and conventional means of funding might not necessarily be adequate. We need then therefore to come up with better ways of funding the rehabilitation of the infrastructure. In terms of the recovery, definitely I didn't find the risk after 6 months. So what then therefore is to happen in the future, or what would like now to be as the next step? Would love then to start looking at remote reading, what they call smart meters. Yes, it's going to require quite a lot of funding, but it's one of the areas that we are saying, let's start looking into that. Because if we were having better ways of metering, even the issue around tokens, it would be important, because it could remotely load the electricity to the meter concern, in order to make sure that the person doesn't have to travel to get their share of electricity. So it's one of the areas that we are looking at as part of our also demand side management, because we also view that if you can see how much you're saving every hour, then you're likely to have a behavioral change. And also on the issue around many I should have said rural, when it comes to KZN and Limpopo, I should have said areas without bulk infrastructure. So yes, I do appreciate Mpumalanga and elsewhere having some areas that are rural, but generally the challenge of bulk infrastructure is not there. We are not saying that any province is better than the other. All that we're trying to do is that for whatever money we have, let's try to aspire as we can, and also try to look at other programs around rural development, energy security, food security, and all that. So that's basically where we're looking at. And then with any decision campaign, that's a very, very important. We definitely need to look at how we're going to work together to try and make sure that it's not just all punitive measures for any campaign, but also what other measures we're going to do that we have. Under the Interministerial Committee on Energy, we have a whole work group on the issues around energy efficiency. So I'm hoping that they are going to include the municipalities in this area. And on the one-stop shop, are a functional. That's a very, very valid point, and also an area of concern. We indicated that some of our ISPs and one-stop shops, they are not functioning as we have left them to be. But then therefore that means that we need them to tighten up in our monitoring and compliance issues as a department. And then in terms of the transformation of the industry, definitely. That's why we are doing the cultural charter to make sure then that going forward there is a real transformation in this particular sector. There is no doubt about it that electricity is not as cheap as it used to be. And I'm not going to discuss this one yet, because the regulator is actually deliberating on the matter. And to include IEC in Western Cape and Bumalanga, I think that's the matter that we can, it's definitely not going to be looked at. As we already indicated, we want the SA now to also assist in making sure that some of these, in other words, they need to increase their corporate investment in this particular area. So that's what we have to consider that. And then the issue of the 50 kilowatt hours Definitely the point is well made and definitely very valid. And we need them therefore to be able to, this discussion is also being carried out at the IMC, our month preempt the outcome of that discussion. And then definitely the issue around solar geysers, you're 100% correct. We need to make sure that our houses are energy efficient. Energy efficiency doesn't only mean electricity, reducing your electricity consumption, but it also means how you arrange your house in a manner that is going to capture the biggest amount of sun during during the day, but also the areas around solar water heating. How can we make sure that we reduce the burden of water heating from the electricity area? And that includes mainstream of renewable energy. The mainstream of renewable energy is a bigger program than just solar geysers, because we do have people who want also to include wind energy, who want to include solar energy into our grid. And a number of tariff incentives are in place to make sure that happens. All we need to do now is to create some certainty on the how. How is that going to be done? As much as the tariff is there, then what is the next? What are the next steps? So that is the area that we are looking at the moment. And in terms of the issue around skills, I think what we are, well, the skills that we provide is the engineering skills. That's what we try and provide. So in other words, we try to get our intervention from the engineering side. That's definitely not adequate. At municipalities, most of the time, you need process and process management skills. And what we are saying is that is what we were able, within the budget that we have, we were looking at least the planning of the electricity infrastructure. At least it must be up to scratch, because if your infrastructure is not technically correct, you are likely to cause unintended consequences like accidents and all that. So
exactly what you said, Your Honor. I'm not seeing that answering every one of the questions. I know people want their question answered, feel good. But even if it's incorrect, that's fine. Because we agree that there's an agenda we adopted, which we must follow. If we don't stick to the agenda, it's not going to work. Otherwise, you are going to be the discussion that's not helping. I'm not struggling with you, I'm struggling with members here who want to struggle with you. You are fine. So I would try to suggest that the member, the minister, wait for you, and then we go to the next one.
Thank you, Chairperson. I think in relation to the approach that you suggested, that the questions that we have not answered, we should put in writing and submit to the committee. But also the other matters, we believe they are sub-critical, like the NERSA processes. But there's an important point that has been raised about the ability of NERSA to deal with municipalities when they actually up the surcharges on electricity, which is also one of the key issues that the IMC is dealing with. I also believe that there's a point that we would need to bring to this committee as well as the other portfolio committee of COCA and Energy, which is the status and of municipal distribution infrastructure. That would then help to give a clear indication of what is the magnitude of the challenges in municipalities are in relation to the infrastructure issue. In conclusion, Jefferson, I think one of the key issues that we'll be dealing with is also in relation to the diversification of energy sources, even in our own personal households, to make sure that we can save for cooking and heating. Let us use LPG, which is liquefied petroleum gas, and also solar water heating for the geysers, which consume a lot of electricity, and use electricity for light and small appliances. In that way, we could then be able to personally carry the responsibility to reduce the overreliance on electricity. we are driving the renewable energy program aggressively, so and I believe at a later stage through the different committees will be able to come and present what it is that is being done at that level. And I would like to say thank you, Chairperson, for the very important point that was raised about municipalities generating revenue from electricity. And what we need to follow is the percentage of expenditure from revenue generated that is being spent on the maintenance and operation of the infrastructure. That is another point. Thank you very much, Chairperson.
Thank you very much, Chairman. You are right when you identify unfinished business. The debate that must happen between the committee that you have mentioned, that's the work that you must follow up. What the questions have done is to flag the areas that you must follow up in greater detail than we've been able to do so. When you go out, you have a sense of where things are going. You have hinted at the progress and challenges that must be dealt with. So it helps us to help those in our mind as we interact with you. Thank you very much. We appreciate your presence here. It helps. Members, just give contra letter. I know they will agree with us, they will be very brief. This is a double dipping by contra letter. The Digital House, which we are in a sense part of, had a presentation yesterday, but we agree that we must do a presentation quickly. Please go ahead.
Well, thank you, Honorable Chairperson of the committee and members of Parliament, as well as everybody else who will come to contribute. I would imagine that members have had the opportunity to interact with the written brief submission, which has not been extended by the Congress of Traditional Leaders of South Africa. And as such, I would not bother to read the presentation except to pick on some areas of emphasis within what has already been presented. I hope, Chair, that you will come very closer to your expectations. Chair, if we relate to the nature of local government and the governmental relations, obviously, in addition to what has been captured here, we realize that we now have rural development, which is one of the five key national priorities of government. And looking into the landscape of South African territory, wherein you have both metropolitan and cosmopolitan areas. And in a number of provinces, you do have rural communities, which of course, quite a number of them are governed in terms of the traditional leadership system. And therefore, it just becomes logical that the institution of traditional leadership plays a very pivotal role in that space of rural government or rural local government. And probably that's why we now have the reconfigured Department of Cooperative Governance and Traditional Affairs, with emphasis on traditional affairs, which I hope that going forward we will see to the capacitation of the institution to ensure that it plays its role in a manner that enhances service delivery at that stage. As is common knowledge, that as a constitutional democracy, we have Chapter 3 of the Constitution, which among other things encourages intergovernmental relations, cooperative system, which through that kind of interaction will be able to make a better impact. And as such, this therefore means that the more capacity we build at that sphere of government, which is at the cutting edge of service delivery, it becomes very important. You see, one of the challenges that we have seen at local government is that you have rather the way in which local government is treated, let alone the decorum accorded to that sphere of government, is not really encouraging a quality leadership. And as such, you have a great challenge of inadequacy in terms of capacity. In a number of municipalities, it's quite easy to find councillors who are neither educated nor trainable. And it's a serious indictment which really has to be looked at if we're serious about that sphere of government. And as such, to us as traditional leaders, we really believe that if we invest in terms of capacity at that level, we will definitely change the complexity of our development at stage. Probably, Chair, if we look into the proposals that we are bringing forward as the Congress of Traditional Leaders of South Africa, other than those that you will see, we really feel that the funding formula, we need to revisit it, particularly that most of the situation, it is determined by demographics. For as long as demographics play an important part, the funding formula will continue to remain skewed and unrealistic, because it will always favor urban local government institutions. Yet the settlements that are there, which are in fact holding those municipalities to themselves, most of those people who are there, you will find that they are from rural provinces, but with the hope that there are better opportunities in urban areas, they just follow those areas. So if we develop rural communities and strengthen traditionally the state institutions, will definitely create an environment where people find it better to stay where they are than commuting to urban areas with the hope of getting a better life. Let's try and build a better life where people are. Almost one before the last step, we just wish to emphasize the establishment of the Department of Traditional Affairs. This has been said for quite some time by various heads of state addressing the institution of traditional leaders. It is not quite palatable if people of such positions articulate specific policy positions and facts do not come into fruition. Probably the essence attention and specific attention to those will make a difference in terms of our approach in dealing with the challenges facing local government. The last issue, Chair, from our side, talks to the demarcation of one. You see, we are now going towards local government elections. And we find that the way or the system used by the demarcation board, in a number of instances, it is not necessarily sensitive to the boundary, you know, of the traditional council. And therefore, it creates confusion, which in a way impinges on the level and the pace at which we accelerate service delivery in those areas. Because while we are supposed to be dealing with issues of integrated development plans in an attempt to create a more coherent and coordinated and offensive towards attending to issues of local government, we find that there's a lot of tension due to issues which have been adequately addressed properly. We would be focusing on issues that we want to focus on. So, to us, as the Congress of Traditional Leaders of South Africa, we appreciate the opportunity and really believe that if all of us can be committed to strengthening the local sphere of government with all spheres of government, of course, provincially and nationally, integrating their planning system and making resources available, it will definitely change the complexity of the South African population and indeed enhance the program of the development action. Thank you very much.
Thank you very much. We appreciate your input and especially your zeroing into your recommendations, because it helps us to keep them on our record, so that when we come back to the discussion of the report of the committee, when we discuss the relationship traditional leaders, we will look at those discussions and then the committee will take a view about what we say about it. Remember, we will not discuss this presentation now. We had part of this discussion yesterday. It links to that discussion that we had with the National Council of Traditional Leaders. So when we discuss it, it will be discussed together. There have been some negotiations on the side like here among the people who are in the program. So we will now have to gather something instead of what you had
mentioned.
Who is representing the other? Can you come next to where the leader is?
My name is Juan Kale from ICASA, Territory Chief of Army for Democracy in South Africa. Before closing my presentation, I would just like to thank the committee for inviting us to present our view on the current challenges that are facing local governments in the country. I will first go through the current legislation on local governments and see thereafter where we are in terms of the mandate that is being imposed on the municipalities in the country. The South African legislation on local government emphasizes that the municipalities have a pivotal role in democratizing society and fulfilling a developmental role within the community solution. In this context, municipalities have a clear mandate as indicated in the Constitution, that is Chapter 7 of the Constitution. Having said that, the question is, from those mandates that have been imposed on local government or rather municipalities, the question is, how much have you achieved in fulfilling those? What we mean by the developmental role, this implies that municipalities must have policies and institutional frameworks that support and sustain the development of local people. Such plans must be geared towards achieving and progressive realization of Millennium Development Goals that have been set throughout the country and the world. And fundamental rights of the people. Moreover, local government must promote good governance. Again, it was given the fact given the extent the delivery process quite clear with the way these municipalities are delivering developmental local government is intended to have a major impact on daily lives of South Africans and should seek a new focus on improving the standards of living and quality of life. Thus, in short, developmental local government means strong leadership, a clear vision for local government in terms of achieving what is being stated in the national policy. This requires municipality and municipal officials to discharge their responsibilities with prudence and in an efficient, transparent, and accountable manner, thus promoting good government. Again, very enshrined in the Constitution. These are some of the principles of government and public administration. Again, the question that the government should attend to are these policies, fulfilling all the environmental controls that principles. What do you mean by good governance? Good governance entails the existence of efficient, accountable institutions and systems. And entrenched rules that promote development to ensure that people are free to participate in and be cared for. One thing that I need to clarify on that, having said something about participation, what is the crisis that the country is currently faced with is the fact that there's no clear or much separation between the municipalities and the public. Hence, the public is feeling that they are being isolated in policy processes and implementation. That's one of the clear reasons why people said, now it's enough. First of all, she got government to listen to us, to actually take to the stress. It should be noted that the fundamental goal of a democratic system is citizen satisfaction. I think municipalities should work towards achieving that high satisfaction from the public. Again, there is much trust on the issue, and they now are looking for defining elections. Therefore, the effectiveness of good local government needs to be judged by the capacity of local government structures to provide an integrated development approach to social and economic development issues and to supply essential services congruent with the needs of the judge of local In this regard, municipalities should be able to identify that what health regards are going to be affected on. Municipalities should be able to...
Sorry.
on a point of order. I see from the presentation that they are making 7 recommendations at the end. Now, I think that is really what the committee wants to get to. The first part of what the problems are in setting up, I think we know very well, and those 7 are quite extensive also. So, for time concerns, isn't it possible that we can go into here to that?
I think the proposal is quite good. In this kind of challenges, everyone was very familiar with, we're all aware of the challenges. Then it has a good difficulty, the accommodation that we're making that the industry is working hard to push. So, can you allude to yourself that, of course, yes. Okay, first, as you go through the presentation, you'll notice that I've noticed the fact that there are, of course, some crises with our democracies, and the question is, what we do with those challenges. One of the challenges that we put forward is to for municipalities to ensure that there is public participation. I think now the challenge is that all municipalities should actually go to the people that are out there and talk to the people, let the people voice their concerns as to how to improve the system. Because of course the problem is the system, the problem is the character within the municipality, then let the public put for what shows that the community has to improve the system. Then one of the crises of course is the level of corruption amongst public officials. My concern is here, we've got good tools in place. The Municipal Climate Management Act. Then you start asking yourself, what's the problem? Why is it not that implemented? For us, it is that we strongly feel that government officials, they know how to manipulate the system. In this case, we need to strengthen those internal control mechanisms and enforce. People should understand that everything has got consequences. Should I not comply with the legislation? What is the consequences? Thirdly, we need to promote open local government. So, municipal officials, they must always be aware of the fact that they must always provide answers to the public. So, this is we need to promote accountability to officials. We are aware of the how our resources are utilized. One of the challenges again is the actual alignment of what of IDPs in the budget. So the effectiveness of municipalities to deliver on their money is largely dependent on their ability to plan and allocate public services in a developmental and sustainable level. Therefore, it is significant that municipalities can integrate communities and their development plan and when allocating what budget. It is important to note that the IDP is informed by the sources which can be afforded and allocated through the budget process. Therefore, the budget must in turn be aligned with the IDP and its objectives and strategies. The clear message is municipal officials should know exactly what to deliver, when to deliver, with what resources. Of course, that is being informed by the participation from the community. Again, another challenge that we are facing as a country is this political and administrative tension. How could that be the result? It is crucial that current prevailing political and administrative tensions are resolved in order to enhance and deepen local democracy. The relationship between politics and administration should ensure that partisan concerns do not compromise the management of the administration, which is the core element of ensuring delivery. For instance, this relationship should guarantee that councillors do not exert pressure on officials to act in the interest of particular constituents. So we see and say the message is very clear. We cannot compromise service delivery. So there must be demarcation between political and responsibilities and administrative responsibilities. I think at some point it was alluded to the fact that some of the municipalities are so not sufficient resources to deliver on their mandate. Again, our proposal in this regard is that the government should review intergovernmental and municipal relations to what can ensure on that. The same pair government should look into those municipalities that are not viable in terms of resources to deliver on their mandate. Again, the issue of skills, it was reflected from the previous presentation. The question is, do all these policies people with necessary adequate skills to deliver in their language? Of course not. One of the major challenges is in the area of what project and program management, financial management. Then again, I think with the turnaround strategy should test also the interest that municipalities do have artists, adequate skills, people with skills. Again, the question is, we train people, then, to retain on that show, I think we need to capacitate people, but test the strategies to address to how to retain the skills that we have developed. In conclusion, we say, of course, the fact that the country is facing a huge challenge in terms of promoting a developmental government and good governance. With the proposals, recommendations that we've made, we pose a challenge on the government, particularly COCTA, to still have to look into those proposals and help make sure that there is enough resources to empower both municipal officials and also the public to start engaging themselves in local government issues. Thank you.
Thank you very much. Honourable members, we're going to move to the next presentation, the DSA. Who's on the DSA? No, you can't see that you are coming.
Human resource expert colleagues that are in municipalities. Those who are not doing very well. If my understanding is correct, can we request that you increase that quantity to all educating the poor as well? Thank you.
Thank you, Chair. Two questions. One is that can I just find out when was this CNDA mandate project started? And also, according to BDSA, is there any impact on the capacity building program that they are offering to the country? Any improvement of that program?
Martin, they are actually very skilled artisans, and this is really one of our short skills that we're in. So my question would be, how many of these skills, where are these people live, in which provinces, and in which departments more or less in the southern? Thank you.
Thank you for the presentation. My question is to DDSA. you say that is for the turnaround center on the resource of school, on hospital facilities. Now that they are still also upgrading the existing substations and university stations in some areas, my question is that, is there any kind of strategy? Because when you understand, in some of the hospitals, especially level one, there is a problem, and the very decision of life, of electricity, there's a problem of the road hospital and the south life, and as you know that, hospital and the life depend on the electricity equipment. So what, therefore, have you got any up for those areas that sometimes they've got dead weather, electricity failure? Thank you.
Just come to this side. Kanabe, Uji, etc. Go ahead.
I just want to ask some questions to Jasper. Do you have your recommendations? All your recommendations sound nice and very broad. In terms of how to realize open local government, you say that it must be done this way. But you are not specific about how. You are just saying that this must be done. The question we have here is that there are public projects. And we all agree that there should be inclusive government, there should be public participation. All these things we don't disagree with. The challenge we have is how should that be the road be done? All of us agree that it should be done. And some of the people are saying it has been done. But when you say there should be public participation, there should be open local government, corruption should be kept and all that, there should be the political and administrative tensions should be alleviated or should be dealt with. The question is really more about what you suggest, what is wrong, this, how it is done. And as far as the DBSA is concerned, the among all these challenges there has been projects. What type of project have you embarked upon? And what impact has your project had in area, not necessarily where the project took place?
Yeah. Thank you to Isasa. The recommendations to, in terms of internal audit, in terms of contrast, what Info has presented to us here yesterday, well, I do believe that with internal audit, you can report from a ton of coffee to the bigger beginning of tenure. So, but the effort is also to place on skills and capacity. I would advise or recommend that we must also have in that recommendation the training of skilled and trained people properly so that we can have proper internal audits as a municipality, unlike having certificate of consultants who are making big bucks and other decisions.
Thank you,
Jay.
Thank you,
Mr.
Jasper. My question is for DBS, which one question? You mentioned second and future. How do you monitor the funds that you like to know? And the only question that I have is, where do you see the funds? Thank you.
Roman?
Yeah, Jefferson, also just to the data, I sometimes hear shocking stories about what I would call local democracy. Not all the councils get even notice of a meeting. There isn't an agenda. Decisions are taken, suspensions and so are not reported. Now on this, you call open local governments, and I know you at Parliament drive a program of overseeing that we voluntarily. Can't you assist with this, or at least with a checklist, that we get what I call more open local democracy, that at least the basic things are done, so that you have participation of the councillors, and then you can also can have public participation and oversight. Then just to the DBSA, the wonderful work you are doing, I think if it weren't for you, much more would have gone wrong in South Africa. I just want to ask you, can you place all the professionals that are available, or do you also experience a shortage of professionals, or if you have the money, would you be able to place more?
There's no reason for three of you to speak or four of you to speak.
Thank you very much, Jefferson. I really like to appreciate the presentation you received. And I only want to ask one question to DBSA with regards to the pledge of 70 billion that they talked about, and all the trainings and everything that they want to support our local government. So I just wanted to find out if they are not going to charge interest to those municipalities, because spending that money as a bank, you might need something in the share. Thank you. I just wanted to find out.
Some of the questions to you, that are for new government administration, they're not expecting that. The data to do what you suggest they should do. Can we have some, anybody else that I'm speaking?
Oh, okay, what's my goal?
Just quick question to add on what has already been said to from DBSA. Just want to check when DBSA doing the funding, they also extend the funding to maybe to community projects. If I may set an example, the machine that from us on the ground as well. If they do such funding, how do they monitor in terms of giving, you know, capacitating people that have been funded by selling them, and to check also the value for money. Thank you, Mr.
President. The DBSA, you identify yourself as part of the network. Where are you with the discussions about the collaboration, better collaboration so far at DFI?
Just one quick one. For example, there's no mention of physical means within the entire system. And you needed to be informed whether there's an impact in that regard or not, you're suggesting something else.
Thanks for the question. I think we need to kind of know where to start in terms of addressing the challenges that we are alluded to. We need to start asking ourselves where the problem lies. Is the problem with the system? Is the problem with the processes, the structures, or is the problem with the people who are leading or the people who are guiding this process, this system?
Yeah.
The answer is very simple. The problem is this, the people, the attitude, the culture. Then the position is to doctor. How do you then root out those elements of corruption, for instance? Because police are there, like I said, in the office. Just because of much research, I mean, in this regard. the floor is ours and the consent can't be space. As you see, we're running a program in various municipalities. We encourage OCDA in terms of the definition of the municipalities of social work we're going to work with. We implementing two local governance barometer and citizen report cards. We want to get the input, the perceptions from the public. What are they feeling about government in terms of the level of governance, level of services and so forth. And at the same time, we also want to speak directly to Minister of Bishops and tell us their stories in terms of do they believe ability and engaging with citizens. Issues around transparency, issues around accountability, then from there we'll then say, this is the problem, the problem. We'll then provide our recommendations directly to OCDA, elaborating issues that must be dealt with. Coming to the question on CED governance, of course, this one most important structure or a role player in the process, we cannot isolate them, of course. The one of the players in terms of promoting this or enhancing good governance. I think this is where questions that are set to me. Of course, I believe in a way retaining of our municipal officials is one of the critical elements, because the question is, do people understand the legislation? Perhaps not. Thank you.
Thank you, sir. I'll start off with the last question going up, the collaboration among CFI. This is a voluntary network that we've established over the years to exchange notes and share ideas on what we're doing. This would happen at the forum level to look at various issues as well as collaboration on a bilateral level on a project by project basis wherever there's an issue or a project that we are funding. We are aware that currently there are discussions about possible grouping certain DFIs within a particular structure, but what we're talking about is what we've been doing all along, even before this kind of discussion took place. Also, in terms of the funding of community projects, yes, we'll look at some funding of community projects and on the basis of their merit. In that, obviously, we look at the project in terms of various risk criteria that we apply as part of mitigating against the risk that we're taking. And we do have our monitoring and evaluation unit, and also our risk assessment area that makes sure that everything is taken on the basis of the value of the project, the return, and the mitigated risk. The in terms of the 70 billion that we're taking over the 5-year period, yes, we'll charge the municipalities interest because this is the lending program. What will be a grant out of that is the 300 million, which supports capacity building within the infrastructure program that we are funding. But the challenge in this, the funding of municipalities, of course, is the resource base and the absorption capacity of the different levels of municipalities. And we were raising this idea of liberating meat in order to support those kinds of municipalities that do not afford normal lending rates of DBSA, let alone commercial banks. I'll ask my colleagues to cover more on placing professionals. The tender money program started off on a relatively low scale, funded jointly by government and by ourselves, based on any surpluses that we make with clawback on the program. It has now grown from strength to strength, and my colleagues would attest that obviously if we had more and more money, we would place more of the professionals.
But maybe this is not the solution. It is the solution temporarily. The idea is to develop capacity at local municipal level, because these are short-term measures. They may not be sustainable. So I think we still need a better solution to that. In terms of funding, question was raised about whether DSAs are monitoring funds. We have a very rigorous monitoring and process, or the project by project, and also in our governance structure. You recall in my presentation, I showed what we call a house. There's government, there's enabling processes, and then there's the core business. So that is our focus to take responsible risk in areas of development. Sources of our funding, DSA was last funded by the government prior to 1994. We self-funding, we live off our balances, we raise money from the open market, both locally and internationally. And that's why we have to charge interest and monitor our lending program much more closely. In the areas where, regardless of whether there were protests or not in some of the areas, I think, as we have seen from the presentation done yesterday and some today, there are definite deficient concerns in the various municipalities in terms of service delivery. So we believe that the absorption capacity, some of the municipalities have communities that do not have access to facilities. In some cases, the lag between planning and implementation. Yesterday, I think examples were made about housing, where the housing project gets down to municipalities that may not have had that kind of plan, and also the fact that you need more interaction between the municipal planning officials and the communities to allow the expectation to be toned down a little bit. We understand that when people are waiting for amenities for a long time, everything should have happened by yesterday. So some of it is caused by frustration because of the lead time in the process. But we believe that some of our interventions will go a long way towards alleviating some of it. We are aware that we are by no means the only institution. Nor can our solution alone cover all the problems that are available.
Okay, one minute, and then we move next. Yeah.
Thanks very much, Chair. Chair, the issue of willingness in the Monday program started from the August 2006, and any impact that we've made, yes, Chair, quite a number, but in summary, we have assisted the municipalities where we are deployed with a lease now, our estimate is about 30 billion of meat, and we've implemented projects to the tune of about 12 billion. The projects that we implemented, we finalized about 3,000 technical and non-technical projects. But also, there was a question around, and I think I'll combine this, around support for human capacity building in municipalities. We have deployed many projects from projects who are known as the individual municipalities. And what we've done is, in terms of training, is to focus our training to officials. We pay all the training costs, but ask municipalities to pay SMT just to get their commitment to training and not make them trip for shopping or other kinds of commitments. We also have paired our experts that we've deployed with the young professionals. 160 graduates and 124 academics. Where we're sitting now, our intention was to make sure that we prepare them for adoption by municipalities, but in the process also assist them if they are graduates to register with professional bodies, if they are academics to take a registration test, and they are to be registered as a full artisan. Where we're sitting now, 15% of our young professionals have been absorbed by the municipalities, even before we expected that problem. Chair, the artisans that we have on the ground of 124, we intend to upscale this program to 300 by the end of the financial year. They are in the fields of plumbing, electricity, water, and they are also in teaching and assignment, those areas that our core municipalities are looking at. Here, lastly, the question was raised around the availability of skills on the labor market with trouble. In the beginning, we targeted retired skills, simply because we wanted to capitalize on that experience in the municipalities. Quickly we started running out of the retired skills and we went to for those that are towards the end of their career. We also have run out of those, especially engineering, finance and planning. And we went on tender for professional service providers that are keeping hold of these skills. As we're speaking now, we got about 19 professional service providers. And applicants would have been to have about the entire continent being individual deployment. Here we are out of money, where we're sitting now, and we appreciate more attention.
Both of you. You can re-answer the questions you asked. Give me a little 2 pages for us. So that it's satisfied that you give that answer. They are going to be processed, we can assure you that. We're just trying to manage the time we have with the presentations that we have. You're not intending to be broadcast to you. You've got nothing against the DBSA. The data is paid with Google Maps. Let's move to the next presentation. Thank you very much. We appreciate your input here. And any other question that you think you want to? There's a lot of information in what you gave. I think this is what makes this difference. Try to look at recommendations for interventions to make a difference. Let's move to the next presentation. Before I start your private sector, old mutuals. Who is from old mutuals? So, come over here, sir. It's fine, it's hot, you can keep your jacket off. No way. Okay, go ahead.
Thank you, Chairperson. My name is Tristan Tom. I'm the Group Executive for the Group Director for Corporate Affairs, Marketing and Communication for Old Mutual South Africa and New Market. And my colleague is Jerry Panikia, who is the Managing Executive of an initiative called ENEMA, which Old Mutual has participated in sponsored. We will be talking predominantly about our experiences going through the ENEMA Trust. We will be dealing with it in 2 phases. My colleague, Mr. Panikia, will deal with the ENEMA, the background to ENEMA, and I'll talk through some of our experiences and make a couple of recommendations as we've been asked. We've responded positively to the invitation for 2 very clear reasons. We thought we had something to say to our experience with ENEMA. And secondly, we also believe that our issue of service delivery is critical to political stability and economic growth, and that's something we are keenly interested in as an organization. I'm going to ask you to talk to a little bit just about the ENEMA, and I'll take over from you. Thank you, Chair.
Thank you, Chair. Thank you, Honourable Member. The ENEMA Trust was founded 3 years ago with the demutualization of Old Mutual and the unclaimed shares being made available. Half of it comes back to do good work in South Africa. The ENEMA Trust was funded with 50 million rand. And we immediately identified Project Consolidate as a focus point, where retired executives could use their skills and background to go and make a difference. Skills, finance, human resource, translating strategic plans into operational plans, visioning, strategizing, those are the kind of skills which we offer. The trust is manned by 14 people, all with more than 20 years experience in Old Mutual. And we came to this project with a very humble heart, knowing that we know very little about government, but also wanting to make a difference to the country. And in many ways, municipalities are businesses. Although they don't run a bottom line or a profit line, they have income, they have expenses, they've got delivery, and they've got stakeholders. And we've been running the trust for 3 years, 46 projects across the country in municipalities, operating in 7 of the provinces, and lastly we introduced by COCTA, or the previous DPLG, as to where we should be introduced. They have been taking us in where the need has been the most. What we have learned has been that there are hugely energetic people in the municipalities wanting to make a difference. Talented people, but however, often without the knowledge and the background and the experiences. I call them scars on the back, so that they know which wise decisions to make. And Anima has tried to make a difference by transferring skills. We've made our mistakes in business, in running big operations, and we've tried to transfer the skills and the knowledge we've gained on how to run those municipalities on an efficient plan. Some of the lessons we've learned in local government is, of course, the huge vacancies that remain there, and the posts which aren't filled, or acting people being put into posts and they're not given the authority to make the changes which they need to make. We've learned that there are fantastic plans, 6 pieces of paper and strategies. However, the strategies don't get translated into action, measured action, and quickly. We've learned that often government actually needs people to go from the private sector, to go and fill those holes. It's like putting your finger into the dice chamber so that they can fill the holes and stop the bleeding and then start turning the ship around. The Anima Trust has, over the last 3 years, learned that we are actually too small and only 14 people coming out of our metro to make a huge difference. We need to create a far larger and wider private sector presence. You know, it's quite good to point fingers at local government and to say that this is wrong and that is wrong, but we believe that other like-minded private sector companies can step into the breach and make a difference. The work we have done, I'm very pleased and proud to say to you, we've received excellent feedback from the various municipalities where we've worked, but it's too little. So the proposal we have tabled is that there is a far wider initiative that other private sector companies come in and take hands and make the difference which we can as retired executives with scarce skills. However, this cannot only be done by the private sector. We need a political champion who can head up the initiative, who can unblock the blockages, and who can help us move forward when things are going too slow. We also need funding. The funding of the 50 million rand runs to an end at the end of this year. And I believe that private sector companies can play a role in maybe funding a small office for a CEO and some secretariat. However, government needs to pay for these services which it has received, and a cost recovery basis should be applied. Up till now, Anima has not been charging for its services because it comes out of the 15 million rand. And you know, as soon as government starts paying for things which they receive, I would also think that they will respect the time and the skills which they are using to a greater extent. So the vision going forward, the recommendations are a far wider initiative, shared responsibility by several private sector companies, headed up by government, private sector putting some money into it, and bringing on a national footprint of more than 100 retired executives across the country, close to the venues and the municipalities which are struggling, and then government remunerating those retired executives for the help they're giving on a cost recovery basis. That is the vision we are sketching. We are in discussions with the Minister of Culture. Our CEO from Old Mutual is part of that, and we're looking for other private sector companies to come into the fold. Thank you, Chair.
Thank you very much.
Thank you, Chief. Chief, our focus on, and for the purpose of your efficiency, our stick to the script, and we will alleviate our indicator. We just want to share some of the concerns and some of the experiences we've picked up through our engagement with the UNA and through other forums, particularly in our engagement with Lokita Mentor. The one thing that has emerged through the report that we receive very regularly and which we informed of us when we continue funding these initiatives is that a lot of these services that we can display, I think that we mentioned in the house earlier today, fuel sources, corruption, and to a large extent political infighting. So if I can expand on that script for a minute, and it's in our submission, is that the clear division between the political oversight role and the administrative function is not clear in most local government areas. There is a clear demarcation, and that has a very dire impact on the ability of officials, whether they're skilled or capable of the job or not, to deliver according to their mandate. It's also widely regarded that in many instances local government officials' inability or unwillingness to separate the parts of political allegiance has created huge service delivery backlogs and has created at times frustration from organizations where there are volunteer services available. The next observation we have is that there are tremendous amount of unfilled posts that exist in a very senior level. The ones that are most concerned to us are the roles of chief financial officer. Financial skills are a concern, and financial management is a concern. And this also, there are some governance issues around it from our observation, specifically with political intervention and the issue in the finances of a municipality, posing some real problems on service delivery. The financial resources, and my colleagues alluded to that, have been wasted in many instances with lots of work and resources being taken up in the formulation of fantastic policies. And I would like to say some of the things I've had sight of and reasons that they are really world-leading in terms of conceptual nature, the way it's put together. The inability to implement it and to measure seems to be one of the biggest obstacles. Once it is drafted, and the party in the ability to implement it. Now, the question we have to ask ourselves is that a function of the system, is it a function of the people, or is it a function of the processes as they emerge and they lack legitimacy? I'd like to ask you a little bit of both, just from our observation. Firstly, from a people point of view, there is a concern often that the people who have helped construct these things are lacking the ability to implement and execute on them. And then there's also the issue of civil society's involvement and engagement, where those processes that emerge is often a concern that they don't necessarily reflect the role of the entire constituency that's being served. And that also then hampers the ability. My colleague has spoken about the new experience, the upside and the downside. The upside is that there is an overwhelming focus on service delivery and local government. There are forums for debate and discussion. We frequently get asked to talk about it. There's overwhelming interest. Not in government, not only in business, but in civil society. There are organizations who are asking to have space to say something about nothing else, but only be a good thing. The second thing in upside is that there is, from our observation, sitting outside government, a very strong concerted focus from government to deal with it, stronger than we certainly see in the media. That's an encouraging sign. There's also a restriction level of honesty when you deal with officials confronting the problem once they begin to trust you. There's a restriction level of honesty that people realize what the expectation is, they realize what the shortcomings are in delivering on them, and they engage very freely and openly, often without any agenda but with a clear focus on delivery. That is unfortunately diverted by individuals who are sometimes left on the organization. Here, the downside is of the 46 assignments that we've done, 12 have been withdrawn. Some stop with very little reasonable understanding. Our issue very simply on them is we are volunteer service, the people who volunteer the service are paid entirely out of the trust, and my colleague indicated coming out of the Revitalization Fund. So we don't spend a lot of time doing an analysis as to why we stop and move on to the next project. But in some cases, the projects that get stopped are things that we would like to interrogate a little bit further due to the limited resources. We don't dwell on them, we immediately on to the next one. Okay, what have we learned? I agree that I'm part of the mission in the greater scheme of things. We're a small player. We came to do this. Our core focus and methodology is really focused on skill transfer. We assume that the people we deploy have accumulated in excess of 50 years of professional skills. They are not there to remain in that role for an indefinite period. They've got to move past the skills and move on. In that, there are lessons we learn. There is a patronizing nature sometimes that emerges, and there's an assumption that prisoners know how to do it better than the local government. That's not useful, it's not a useful attitude. We've learned that we have to adjust our attitude in terms of that concern. It is a very different environment with very different expectations from a much broader constituency and audience. So that means that it's a very valuable learning for us in the delivery of the service. With us in primary basic communication counting, our capacity to interact most productively with one another was significantly curtailed, and it impacted negatively on our ability to undertake as many assignments beyond the metropolitan areas. There are huge opportunities and requirements in the rural areas. We've only been able to deal with it in the urban areas. Our business experience in the private sector did not often see us well, as I pointed out. Before they prepared our colleagues with the technical ability, it didn't just prepare people with the social and political environment that they have to work in. And that is something we really admit and have learned from. Then coming to the last bit, and that's the recommendations, what can be done in the future. We are of the view that the following conditions will greatly enhance the potential for success in addressing the challenges we've mentioned above. And that may be that the unambiguous acknowledgement of government that there are problems facing local government, that it's not the result of political stability, economic growth will suffer as a consequence. That is almost an imperative for initiatives of this nature to be successful. The identification of a political champion. One of the biggest problems often is that at a pure technical level, we see what the challenge is, everybody sees it, but there's a political intervention or non-intervention that makes it practically impossible to move forward with a particular initiative. So there needs to be, in a sense, a clear separation of function between execution and ministers of execution and political oversight. The issue of a coordinated high-level public commitment from leaders in both government, business, and civil society to address these issues, that is, without a doubt, in our mind, something that will have to happen. There has to be a forum where big business who have the will, the desire to make a contribution to this, together with civil society and government, have a forum to see how they prioritize these issues, measure them, track them, resource them, and see whether, at the next cycle, they will have to come to the party. We have extended an invitation to REMA to many other businesses to participate in this with a volunteer fee. They have been, I would say, declined and at best ambivalent, purely because their concern is that we make the resources available to deal with the symptoms, not to address the root cause. So we get stuck in the process of just dealing with symptomatic issues, not dealing with the root cause issues, and people are reluctant to get into funding these things for too a long period of time. But there is absolute willingness to come to the party. We've spoken with a range of large organizations and companies. There's a willingness, but there needs to be a governance process agreed on between government and business. It can't be one organization. We could be too insignificant to do this as a member on our own. And as a mutual, we have to partner with other organizations to make a meaningful contribution. The last thing is, if there is a very broad availability of a volunteer corps who want to become available, we have spoken to many people who either volunteer their services on a cost recovery basis or on pure volunteer basis. Their frustration when engaging with people is purely that when they're doing
they have a concern that it's a futile exercise. They get involved in a project, they conceptualize it, but never see it to execution and to implementation. And that will demoralize people from wanting to get involved. So we believe that there is an opportunity to do that, but there needs to be a clear governance and oversight function. In conclusion, we are encouraged by the focus, firstly, the committee existence. We are incredibly encouraged by the focus on this and by the utterance made by government officials and the president of service delivery local government. We operate nationally. We operate in 36 countries around the world. We operate in all the provinces. We've got very good interaction with local government in various and government at various levels. So this is something that has raised up in organisation for some time, and we're encouraged by what we see and what we hear. And then lastly, we want to express our gratitude for an opportunity to say something in this regard. Thank you.
Thank you very much, gentlemen. We will also not complain about your gender composition. All female delegates in their letter, so I would object if anybody objects. Thank you very much, members. Let's move to the next one. The Russian Institute of Civil Engineers. Our bosses here suggested you must have a cup of coffee for 5 minutes and come back. Is that okay? Alright. Let's
I'm sure the other people here from other committees, you don't appear to be welcome to. Okay, so, and we looked at the past, the present, and what we need to do in the future. The book has been lying around for a year or two, and not much has happened, but I'm actually delighted to say that a lot of the material in the turnaround strategy I can recognize as emerging from the ideas and the suggestions, which is wonderful. So government does this, and I'm really tough with it. Okay, what do we see? The limited capacity, the limited funds. I think you've seen all of this before in many, many different ways. I just want to try and help you understand systemically what has gone wrong so that we can kind of work out how to fix it. Of course, in the apartheid era, the government then really only looked after the established towns. So 850-something established towns. Yeah, there were townships around them, but in those townships, we didn't have the majority of our black population. So actually, the engineers in place at the time, looking after the established towns, were only looking after the infrastructure of about 14 million people. There were many rural areas, there were the CDU states, that weren't being serviced by municipal engineers. They might have been serviced by other people, but those other people were really only doing a little bit of work. There just wasn't the money or the will to do significant development for the valley. So if you look at that, the number of engineers per 100,000, we were sitting at 21 more or less in 1989-1990. Come the demarcation, the new model of local government, we now servicing 47 million people, wall-to-wall municipalities. But over the years, we've lost a lot of municipal engineering skills. I'm talking about civil engineers, technicians, technologists. I'm sure the same model applies to the electrical engineers, it certainly applies to the planners, the numbers have dropped. So we were at about half the number of professionals that were in place 20 years ago, but we are at four times the population that we're trying to service. One of the fundamental errors that was made when we merged the town to come up with a new model in 2000 was to say, economy to scale, we can get rid of stock. And so, for instance, let's look at a Caribbean where we took Oxford and Benoni and those places and put them together and said, okay, we don't need a clean garden. What was forgotten was that there was some detail and there was, you know, phosphorus and all those places that typically were not serviced. So actually, it should never let any of our professionals go into the building up the number, because the number of people we had to service going forward was enormous. And it wasn't only established local government, we now have to establish services. It's grassroots stuff that takes a lot of time and effort. So we've got the balance, hopefully, out of things. All the red areas are areas where there are absolutely noticeable engineering staff. The orange is one or two. So we are very, very low. Looking at international norms and our historical situation, in the previous era when we had people in the main centers, those are the orange bars. You can see for the small towns, I'm showing along the bottom the size of the towns, and the small towns going up to the big cities, there are a million people and above on the right. The small towns, we had about 40 technical staff to 100,000, because in the small case, you tend not to outsource. In the big cities, we were down to 200,000 because it's easy there to outsource work. I looked at internationally and figures, I was in touch with all the English speaking countries and actually most of Europe, but the Europeans didn't understand the Scandinavians and South Africa from them. So these are figures from Auckland and Brisbane and all over Sydney, San Francisco, Toronto, quite a widespread. And you can see internationally, even although the big cities still are full, they still have the 20, 60, 40, 400,000 that we don't have any longer. We are down to the tiny little trees and trees that just leaf off the bottom of the axis. We have not enough people to do the work. The sad thing is that a small number of people left in local government are not quoting. So when their performance appraisal time comes, they haven't done the miracles that we expect them to be. They contract them not renewed, so we just have left. And those that remain on quoting there. So there's a very strange illness and suffering with it at the moment if we have surgery. The consequences, you've got all the slides, but this is the way we analyse all the projects when our first group of engineers went in to say how are the projects, what do we have to do to fix them, and sadly the projects that were on the ground when our guys arrived, we only managed to salvage 51% with minor results. The others were in dire trouble due to lack of skills, lack of management, poor design, etc. And that is billions lost because we're spending, you know, 20, 30, 60 billion dollars for government a year. If you're losing 50%, that's a lot of money. And I don't have to tell you the housing projects are in as much trouble. There's not the scope, there's not the control. There's the maintenance challenges. We know about potholes are popping up because we're not doing things. Things are falling apart rapidly. I'm not going to go into that. You all know about it. The sad thing about maintenance is not just it's an uncomfortable drive to work, it's that it is affecting the quality of life. And when we were the protest last year, we actually found quite a lot of those issues due to poor earning, not to lack of services, just services became all that stopped. Loss of income, maintenance affects us every which way we look, because we can't run our businesses when the water pressure's down or when there's no electricity or whatever. So can we do all these things, but the impact is enormous. We've also now realized maybe anthrax is going to become a problem with we're not controlling our mental stuff. And so we actually got to do a lot of work on maintenance. I think we've all seen the water loss problem. We are letting billions run down the streets and down the other paths that we need to deal with. So that's the picture that you see. What are the solutions? We clearly have to rebuild, we have to change the system. And you know what, we talked about all these skills. Look at my little pyramid. I need them all. I need the engineers, but we need the artisans, we need the supervisors, we need the laborers. And if some of the parts of this pyramid is missing, it falls down. And that's where we are now. We might have the engineers, but if we don't have the artisans and so on, we can't do the work. Equally, if we don't have the engineers, how do we direct? How do we get things going? We have to completely and utterly rebuild that pyramid. And that's an enormous, enormous challenge, which is going to take a lot of effort, but we've got to start. That's all there is to it. Organograms, develop the young people. The Section 57 appointment, which is a 5-year appointment for senior professionals, whether it's engineers or financial officers or whatever, is a hang-up problem for the five-year contract. And if you don't get around to doing a performance review, those people just leave. I mean, performance reviews are never in place. I see in higher education, they generally say 2 consecutive 5-year contracts. And subject to unsatisfactory performance, you get cut out, not subject to nobody getting around to looking at it. And, you know, that's something we possibly need to look at, how we actually retain people. Because 5 years for any senior is not on. And they must be there for much longer, and we must just have a situation where we can get them removed if we not take you rather than not. So we need to do something about that. And our institution has developed job descriptions and training plans and policies, which we would love to make available wherever needed. We are working with Coxman, as I said, we're working with a number of metros to help with that sort of thing. Clearly, we've got to do something about training. We have had lots of young people in the system, but unless the senior people transfer the skills, sending a brand new graduate to a municipality to be the only person there with any knowledge does not work. We've done detailed studies. The first year we had 150 young people. Only those that were really well managed and a huge amount of time was spent on transferring skills to them have actually developed. We've got a few registered and now they're starting to pick up load in local government. But it's only 20 or 30% of the 150 that have been absorbed and are making a difference because they were placed in municipalities that were not conducive to training. So we have to make sure that we either have put them in strong municipalities, rely on the metros and so on, and not all the metros are that strong anymore, but the stronger municipalities to do the training well, and then farm them out to the smaller municipalities. We've also developed lots of training plans, training systems. We're working with the Engineering Council to have this used for the training of all engineers, not just civil engineers. I have to boast a little bit because we have had successes. We've had a number of young people graduating and coming into the sector and assuming junior posts. They're not going to be senior yet. We've got to realize it's a very long term. But what was great to find for the local government teacher and ourselves was that the first year of our project we had students, which the teacher funded, to get through their experiential year. They graduated, they worked in the local government for 3 years, and now they're at the level where they're ready to do postgraduate studies. So this year, 30% of the bursaries that have been awarded for postgraduate studies actually were for the students who started an original program that we started. So we're starting to see the rewards, but it's a long term, and it's not at scale. We have to do this at a much bigger scale than the massive community that you think. And you can get more retired engineers because you know what, the baby boomers are all retiring this year and they're all wondering what they're going to do when they get home. And we are being swamped with applications now for this type of appointment. Our placement is one of the biggest problems that we have. We're not putting professional people in place. We still have the buddy system or the view that if it's a project management, anybody can project manage. I'm afraid if it's a civil engineering thing, you need somebody who understands civil engineering. If it's electrical, you need somebody who understands electrical. And that is a huge problem. One of the biggest stumbling blocks are the equity targets that are set by municipalities. I heard the damnedest thing yesterday. I was at a metro. They have 43% vacancies, but now they've got too many black men, they've got too many white men, so they can't find Indian, coloured and women, so they can't fill any posts. So they'll happily leave 43% posts empty, which is crazy. So these two slides that I'm going to show you now were not in the presentation. I was just so appalled after being at this municipality. We did a graph in 2004 where we looked at the number of white and black engineering, civil engineering professionals in the industry. You can see the orange is white and the purple is black. I have to try not to be as color conscious as to be too blatant. But over the years, you'll see the number of white engineers obviously is going to reduce as people retire and leave the industry and die. and whatever, and you're going to see the number of black engineers are going to increase as they graduate as technicians or technologists or engineers. So the number of black engineers will increase. This graph assumes that by 2010, all university and university of technology classes would be 100% representative of our population. Basically, whatever percent black, 50% female, the classes. If we get that in the classes, and they are pretty close, only by 2020 will we start seeing that type of transformation. It's not fully one-third white. The only way I can get it to be 89% black is to get the white engineers away. But then I'm going to reduce the numbers. And we can't afford to reduce the numbers. The situation is even more bizarre with the woman, because in 2004 we had less than 10% women. So even if I have 50-50 now, which I'm not, that we're about 35% in the classes, so I'm going to get more graduates coming in, that's the pink. But I'm going to really get to 50-50 before 2030 or 2040. So you can't say only 50% female in engineering. We've got to review it and look at current figures in the industry to set the professional targets. It's killing us the way the targets are set. And I appeal to you to lean on all municipalities to review their equity targets in relation to availability rather than the population, because it is a major problem. Okay, financial viability, no money, we're all broke. But in an analysis that we did with our counterpart, the chartered engineer and chartered accountant, about 80% of that outstanding debt is not to do with indigence. It's to do with big business, you know, the municipalities don't know where to find them or won't penalize them or will give them an interest holiday. And so if they don't pay for 3 or 4 years, they can bank the money, make money on it, and the municipality comes, there's a settlement, okay, if you pay now, we won't charge you. We see that everywhere. We've got to take extremely hard line on debt, and I don't see that because it doesn't seem to be politically acceptable. I don't have a problem with the indigence. It's everybody else that's using the system around and it's stood up to. The equitable share as a result is not being used for the infrastructure delivery or maintenance, so we do need to do something about that. And the whole operation, including audit thing, is essential, because then you can start seeing where there aren't as many grey areas around you, but a clean audit where you don't have a clean audit, then there are all sorts of things that are in question. So it's a big drive that we need to do. We do believe we can use the financial, the professional body to help you with oversight. It could be on finances. Somebody this morning was talking about internal auditing. I think it's essential. But we also believe that we need to do project auditing in a big way, because nobody is coming around doing project audits. And so, therefore, it's very easy. You know you're going to get away, and people keep being paid what they claim without it being checked. And then they're fully paid before the job's finished. So we need to do something about monitoring professional bodies on audits. Reporting is a killer. People are spending an enormous amount of time on reporting. We need to streamline it. We need to put get a set of national policies. Developer contributions. Every developer should be paying. There are not policies on that. There are on the electricity side, but not on the water side. And then even the electricity side, they have the developers appeal and they seem to always win and not pay, which is something that we've got to do something about. It is a big problem. But all this, if we put double, treble the number of technical staff on whichever measures we come up with, and we don't get the technical staff authority, we're not going to get anywhere. And we keep losing technical staff, because you put them there, they come up with solutions, this is how it should be done, and then it gets overwritten for the strangest of reasons. Which means that professional judgment is not being used, not being valued. There are solutions, they don't work, but then that professional person, whether it's an engineer or a chartered accountant or whoever, ends up carrying a can for something that they have no control over. So, I've heard all through the day about stripping the political and the executive role. This is really critical. And if we're going to make this person a chief engineer or a chief financial officer, they may have much role if it goes wrong, but they must have the authority to discipline, to make the right choices, and so on and so forth. The other thing that's killing us is the support department. Most municipalities are split up now, and they've got the support department that needs to support the line functions, but the support departments now make all the rules, and the poor old line function just don't get anything else. Supply chain, the rules are absolutely crippling the situation. So, those are the problems and sort of suggestions from a local government point of view, but we do believe that we can monitor the private sector to a large extent. We've been quite successful at seconding young staff in municipalities, consulting engineers to learn more than they can learn in local government, and then the deal is that they work back for a couple of years having gained an experience. In 1980, 40% of civil engineering staff worked in the public sector. We now down to about 18% working in the public sector. They've all gone to the private sector, so we actually need to do a deal with big business and get some of those old municipal engineers back from the private sector, even as the economists, to help out, and not only rely on the retired people. But they do need to be given authority again. They need to work with the NMs on the turnaround strategies. They cannot work on their own. We discovered this morning, going to a municipality locally, that people were arriving from the DBSA and nobody in the municipality knew they were arriving. Now, that doesn't work. We have to work with the NMs, with officials, to actually make the connection and get the difference. So we've got to be very careful. We've got to be lots of guidelines. We do believe we have to strengthen provincial government from a control point of view, from an oversight, and also from a planning point of view. The supply chain has actually stopped municipalities from getting contracts out because you need technical expertise to write up a tender for a job to be done, but you don't have the expertise, so the tenders never get written up. So we, in Gauteng, we're putting a panel together that is helping the Gauteng municipalities write tender documents so that they can get the project done. It's a central bottleneck. And then also to have, as I say, the pool there to help with the scope of work and so on. We also need to consult contractors to make every public sector tender with contracting conditional to training, but not just one sentence. We actually need to have quite strict criteria, guidelines. We will train so many officers, we will train so many on the Mitsubishi Power Station. There's very nice contracts on training all levels of staff because it's a long contract, it's a big one. A good place to train, and I think we need to be adopting this on all projects that we do. There's also an idea with the backlogs that we have at the moment that we should harness on a kind of a short-term one-off arrangement. The big contract is to help us break those backlogs, very much as there was 10 years ago to break the water backlogs. Get them in, let them get the big development done, but as part of it again is capacity building and training. Of course, education is a big challenge. We don't see OEM being taught at tertiary level asset management. They're still sticking to the curriculum that I studied 50 years ago and I think was in place 100 years ago. We have to look at local government differently now. And then we also could look at public-private cooperation where we ask private sector to help us run some of the public sector projects like EPWT and so on, because there's just not the capacity to expand this EPWT to the extent that we need to for this huge target on job creation. It's also an interesting model on franchising where a big service provider who knows how to do the job is being asked to train all sorts of small organizations to offer their services to municipalities. But if the municipality then finds that this is not adequate because the small company is not doing the job well, then the big organization would go and enhance the skills or take over or fix up or whatever. It is working in some places already as a pilot, and I think we need to look at it. I don't think Rainwater is doing it, but it's the thing that comes to mind is that for Rainwater, for instance, you know how to build, fix, and maintain makers to train a lot of engineers and offer the quality control for a small fee, but they have the skills. And we need to put these people out there to make them available to other municipalities. We're not going to get it all right straight away. The turnaround strategy is wonderful, it's very bold, there's a lot of work to be done, and we have to look at it in stages. I always get this call from the National Treasury, what are the six quick fixes today, you know? So, well, that's fine, we can have the quick fixes, but they must come with a medium term and a long term as well. We can send our support to you. Most of you asked questions of the DBSA this morning, what did we achieve? We've achieved a lot, but our problem is we've largely just support teams that are fighting fires. And we've got to look much further ahead. We've got to put in 5-year and 10-year training strategy. Even in the biggest municipalities, we don't see training policies, we don't see training posts, we don't see all those sort of things. So for us, short term, we need to look at the problems and we need to stop the decay. But then we need to look medium term at long-term development of professionals, get those structures rebuilt, and get all the systems and processes in place. So, in the next 6 months or year, I believe we actually have to have a map or a strategy for each municipality that any support programs will help roll out and get working and functional over the period. And that's in a nutshell what. It wasn't too much of an uphill, but anyway, you've got an idea of what we've experienced and what we think can be done and should be done.
Thank you very much. Members, two presentations. Let me check. Let me stretch, right? You just had a coffee break, so I'm going to stretch you. Elroy, come to your presentation from Blackfest.
In that it is coordinated and it is integrated and it's not just one committee. It's not just a subsection of a cluster. Because there's an understanding by Parliament that an integrated approach is necessary. And we will demonstrate that here. It is in the context of multidimensional, interrelated and independent challenge that we wish to do this presentation, and our appreciation to you. We notice also that you're going to have hearings in all 9 provinces. We have regional offices in KwaZulu-Natal, 2 of them, 2 in Nelson Mandela Bay in Eastern Cape, Nelson Mandela Bay Municipality and Makani Municipality, 2 in the Western Cape, Nelson and Cape Town office, and we hope to engage at the provincial level with the minutiae and detail we need to every province on these areas.
You're going to favor us with a time.
Correct.
And leave the details to the province. I like it. I predict it.
Thank you, Chairperson. I noticed that you in the next time before we even sat down. But we will complete our presentation. But thank you again. Specifically, we are heartened that the debate has moved from denialism, page 3, an increase saying that service delivery as crisis is incorrect, to the statement recently by the Minister Taylor Sikwerka, that third bullet, there is a crisis in service delivery. My colleague Rasula will talk about briefly the long history of service delivery challenges, and I'll take over from there.
Thank you very much for giving us this opportunity. I think by some favor of the chair, I think I'll zoom in on the areas that I know very well and that I work in and that have serious service delivery problems facing millions of people in very rural areas, in urban areas, on the outskirts of the city. Social assistance delivery has improved a hell of a lot. People are getting applications in through the social assistance delivery system SASA. They are then able to get access to the grant for a period of time. However, there are still long periods of waiting to be served at these offices. the infrastructure at SAFA offices that are on called satellite offices. They were from a local office to satellite offices. For example, in the Western Cape, you would find that there's about 238 satellite offices working from six local offices. Those offices are not equipped to immediately deal with applications on a timely and speedy in a speedy way, and that means people are sitting and waiting in long queues. We have started a monitoring program that monitors service delivery applications quite recently, and what we found is the longer period an older person has to wait for 13 hours to be able to get an application in. So we have to look at the delivery of social systems. Yes, we are able to access and commend government for making available the social assistance portion within the GDP to look at people that that are in serious need in terms of the constitutional rights. They need to get that kind of assistance. But service delivery is not having fast enough in that area. It's not on a metro level, on a national level, many people have been excluded from the social assistance system. If you're not part of the vulnerable groups that receive social assistance, you are then left out in the cold, especially in these dark economic times. So we have to look at that. There's much reference about chronically ill people, the unemployed in the submission. The other areas of social assistance, or social security rather, is the private pension area. People, we have to look at how we regulate the private pensions industry, which has serious unscrupulous behavior, part of service delivery to people in need. And we document in the submission just one example of one private pension fund, sovereign fund, that regulates social security issues for private security guards, for example. People are not able to access social security, and that means that they have to stand in line to be able to access the social systems, which is a complete contradiction of a parent result in the older age. I think I will stop there, but I would like to talk about the appeal for the local social system just as a highlight of mine.
So on the ground, what happens is that person is unable to live a life of dignity, but the municipality also makes it difficult. Usually is a registered as indigent, has to apply for social assistance in some form, and the revenue ability for the municipality to render services is compromised. I think one of the things we need to strongly emphasize as a black person in the presentation is that our understanding of service delivery is not to reach people as they say in Afrikaans, family or the begging bowl. I think a lot of work needs to be done by this committee in finding partnerships where service delivery happens in a public manner, and it is heartening to hear presentations from Old Mutual and State where people who are skilled are putting their time voluntarily. Models like the Habitat for Humanity need to be reconsidered to address a very serious problem. On the level of basic services, page 5 of the presentation, you would know just by picking up the papers or reading reports on the PNG website or on Parliament website, the regular reports of polluted rivers, beaches due to lack of maintenance or excessive strain on water and sanitation works, tri-packs interposed with crisis and electricity, illegal dumping of human waste from hospitals and medical facilities, etc., etc. Let's focus just quickly on electricity. A previous presentation alluded to the fact that service delivery was disproportionately effective for us. All of this negative effect on the course, such as the increase in Eskom, will be that people will be cut off. The not paying interest will not be renegotiated. People will be cut off from the services. It will be more expensive to stay warm. It will be more expensive for poor people to cook food. And I think that's an untenable, unacceptable situation in terms of our mandate to realize socio-economic life as described in the Constitution. Our experience in basic services has been recent because of the program, but we are members of the Good Government Learning Network. We work closely with the Sunderland Institution, the Humanitarian Assistance Network of South Africa, we are learning very quickly about addressing issues of rights and crisis chairperson, which I think is going to be a national problem, whether due to natural disasters, as has happened in the Western Cape, or human-made disasters, as we find in many parts of our country, increasingly. A member earlier on spoke about the need to monitor. One of the new programs is the Community Monitoring and Advocacy Program of the Black Bash. We have independently worked within a safety site and in a community. And the community of Durham is one example. We've worked in the Noon, we've provided support in the Johannesburg Metro during the xenophobic crisis. My colleagues can speak extensively on that if you need to know more. But by way of example, the project being involved in terms of community monitoring in terms of service delivery was in the safety site of the Durham and in the local community. We were trained by the South African Human Rights Commission, amending a training guide for monitoring the refugee camp, because this wasn't a refugee camp. Work with the local community trying to understand the problem. And if my colleague could just go to one slide, on the 13th of December last year, there was a walkabout. We actually were instrumental in facilitating a meeting between the mayor, the department of the premier's representative, the Human Rights Commission, and senior officials from the Brederode Municipality and Cape Winder. CDW was present. We walked through Stockland, where the problem was, next slide please, in Medis. And this is what we saw in the township. Overflowing waste, the people where the Zimbabweans need to be reintegrated to have to deal with situations like this. No one of the communities angry. Next slide please, in Medis. I want to show you, if you go to the next one, next one, next one, next one, next one, next one. This is the township in which we walk. This is the community in which there needs to be reintegration. Next one. People debating how this came about. Next one. Community mobilizing. The gentleman with the blue cap at the ward councillor in Jordan, in that ward. Next one, please. Next one. This is evidence of people exceeding the municipal boundary and squatting on illegal property. Next one. Next one. No wonder it's called Stockland. Next one. The supply chain and the growth of Zimbabwean nationals occupying the property and growing by permanent property. Next one. And this is the picture I want you to see. There is an area called the Kutuland, there is no service delivery. Not possible. It would be wrong to fund this area because of the enormous cost and the fact that people will be electrocuted when there will be floods through the valley, and there has been two before. Next one, please, in there. Next one. There's a young woman or girls are carrying water across deep down in human waste and animal waste to her family. Next one. So after one, so one after that. That 60K person has been what we thought was a helpful process. Having worked 2 months in the area, we called together a meeting for the first time for community care social dialogue. Guess what happened? 15 CDWs pitched up, which was great. Representatives from the community pitched up. The monitors pitched up. They were very excited. Regrettably, the Blazer Valley Municipality sent one official from one department. And that is the contrast of what is required to have the coordinated oversight and service delivery. To the credit of that municipality, the mayor then Mayor Charles and Tom initiated a social integration project with the Centre for Conflict Resolution. 75 people attended. Problem. Not one representative from the first community, nor one representative from the affected community was present to talk about social integration. We are trying to work with the Premier's Department to initiate a model for social dialogue around issues of social integration and service delivery, and that's not possible. In terms of cost, 100 million rand was invested for a range of issues. In the affected community program, that the real problem of housing was identified. 25 million rand had happened. We see the graders working. Extra money was given by the Minister of Housing nationally. Problem. The employees are all from here. There is no opportunity for local people to benefit from that expansion in the space. I also think that the time limitation we can draw to a conclusion. The range of issues in our submission is very important, but I want to focus on our recommendations. which I'm sure you want to hear. And these are specifically, after my colleague will also make those comments, these are the following. After we recommend the following. If I just find it, it's on page 6, last bullet. They notice that both expression documentaries are in very real outlets at some time, and therefore propose that the leasing and division of resources from municipalities as described by Cox and recently mentioned around strategy, and the inference that the division of revenue between the three tiers of government being divided must be an urgent priority. Otherwise, there will be increased violent doctrine in the queue for the realization of constitutionally entrenched socioeconomic rights and those are defined by international law. I remember the quote. The one community presence is only when we close the N1 or violent protest that government takes up seriously. One senior official said, brutally frank and honest, I didn't know whether to admire the man for his frankness or to cringe with embarrassment. He said in Afrikaans about the safety center. The ICN seminar that company. There is not one vote in that matter. And that is sad, very sad, but I think the anticipation of the people who come, the Cup against South Africa, the Cup against, and the jostling for the 2011 local government election is going to put additional pressure on good rights for real life, and that's also a great concern. We also say the following, two more points of recommendation. Many poor people are prone to natural disasters, such as living in floodplains, degraded flat landfills. Many are maximum living in difficult circumstances and safety sites established due to a human-made disaster. The relevant agencies must have immediate access to support, and a framework approach with adequate resources must be available. During the xenophobic crisis in May 2008, we were in the premier's office. People were running around trying to find out whether a Somalian interpreter fulfilled the requirements of the Ministry of Finance Management Act. It's too late to find the money in the middle of the crisis. Resources must be made available to them. A mechanism and protocol framework for social dialogue with clearly delineated roles, functions and responsibilities must be promoted and where necessary imposed. The political arrangement in this problem especially has seriously compromised any ability to address issues of social dialogue and everybody suffers. An independent monitoring mechanism must be in place to help develop a model to deal with crises in service delivery, whether human mind or natural. That's all I have.
Thank you, Honourable Chair Timmons. I would just like to ask this committee to look at the appeals process within the Social Security system itself. You have a right, if you get rejected, you also have a right to go and appeal. Within the social assistance system, there is a tribunal being established, but it's not operating properly. We need to look and find money to be able to get this tribunal to operate efficiently, effectively, to be able to deal with that backlog of 60,000 cases at this point in time. Secondly, I would like to focus on the UI unemployment insurance fund. For example, across South Africa, you have to establish some regional appeals bodies that can deal with appeals effectively and efficiently. Some provinces don't have that. We need on a matter level to look at this. In terms of the Commissioner for Occupational Injuries and Diseases, that commission's office is preventing so many people accessing money that they are insured against in injuries at the workplace, in diseases at the workplace, but the operation of that office is very ineffective at very slow. If this commission could also just on a national level look at those processes. That was my explanation.
Thank you very much. Remember, we've got three presentations. Let's give appropriate attention to each one of them by the questions that we're going to ask. You don't have to ask questions to all three of them. But do ask your most important question. Leave the others to other colleagues of yours who might have a comment, something like that, so that we can cover as many as possible, that all of you must speak before we move to the next interaction. So, who wants to start? Member Gloria, you want to start?
And then let me take this three of you here in front, who have already indicated. Okay. Four. Okay. Going ahead of that. And then one.
I want to put one question to the centenary. And that is.
Which one?
The
institute.
The institute.
Okay.
It's on the training as a long term. And I think when you have it set up the way you set it up, it's actually quite frightening. But somehow we've got to do a balancing act because we're building a lot of houses out there. We cut them, project managers, how do we do both things? And I really like the part about, people doing and on the ground training. I think often what we're doing is we're too keen to get into the top positions, but we're not doing the groundwork. How do we do that? We've got to deal with those positions now. And we've got to be doing the long term.
Later on, when you hire them as consultants, they still come to you, not that cheap. So we've got the test and the true situation. And what I wanted to understand is that in our own program, or as you're suggesting, how do we deal with that? Do you see us being able to bridge that gap? Because in the rural areas, definitely we're not able to retain this kind of team. We may talk forever and ever thinking we may not arrive at them redirecting their efforts to rural areas. So to some degree, there will be a good distribution of this particular skill system.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Okay.
Briefly, I would like to comment as there's a good job done by all three presenters. Because when I was interested in part of the central it's going to be a lot of work because one wants to speak to education. But I want to say it has taught me a lot of things personally. And I think one will understand that there are a lot of people that are living to happen in this country. Bravo. Now I go to South African Institute of Civil Engineering. You are dealing with the youth, that's why maybe I single you out. I want to say that we come across a lot of youth who are different, they want to be assisted. Some of them, of course, want to become engineers. Can you secretly get your contact now? Thank you.
Thank you
for the say the person's settings or the conditions. My presence are fully on good with one. The future development, then it is only those who believe at the service of more than 3 years. Now my question is that why is this benefit limited? Because even though that held 10 years service or the NS is strategy for the pensioners. Who are for the 3 years of service. Secondly, for the purpose in the census of 7 colleges, which 2 are not covered in the 9 colleges, and why are they left behind? Is it due to political conflict? Thank you.
Thank you, Mr. Chief. Just a comment from my side for the Institute of Engineers. The subject is under obvious from the presentation that we have seen, that the employment of engineers, which should not be a fiction for specific employment, it should be a permanent employment for this continuity. Because the infrastructure that cannot be left unchanged and new people go in every 5 years. And it's just a comment from my side. Very good presentation, and yes, we have a lot of problems. As for Black Sash, you see within the picture, which you have presented, sadly, it's not just a good. You can find the same picture, you can put a different caption underneath it in all 9 of our provinces. And that is what our challenges are, and that is what we need to look at, and especially if we're going to our own discussions, to make certain that as our federal office comes to an end, we will be able to eradicate all of those positions. And also the pension fund. I think, you know, it's something that is very serious and very concerning, especially people contributing their lives and want to make sure that they're comfortable to be old years. And unfortunately, that doesn't happen because of how treacherous operators. And I think we should also look at the municipal council pension fund. It's also a major concern. Thank you.
Thank you, my question is to share the address to Institute for Engineering. With regard to the population that the Japanese teachers in engineering have, that's how it's taken. I think that the fact that the engineering was about the same thing in savings to the Republic, but in in 2000, only 1,300 were in for 7 million people. So I just wanted to find out from the how can they actually deploy their civil engineers, because if we look back, the Eden Center was failed. And I think that because the things that were rendered actually adequate, what happened there are 20,000. Why didn't we left those engineers about 1,300? Why didn't they just deploy in those townships and the rural communities where there is no infrastructure? Because when you look, the infrastructure during our passage, it was still, it was not actually addressing the problem of the black community. So I just wanted to find out what actually they try to do in trying to address those issues, or also to help the municipalities. And my second question is actually to the message. On the slide, they indicated that the municipality where Joran is part of, they actually call it a meeting. And the CDW attended, and one person from the municipality attended. So I just wanted to find out where was the one committee, and where was the council, what council from that area, or are those people residing in those camps not part of the CDW? So I just wanted to find out. What have you done after that meeting? What was the revolution there? Thank you very much.
Okay.
Yeah, thank you, Chair. It was a nice lecture. The presentation is very heartening. When the Turkish equality, similar to the other side, also showed some focus to the Human Settlement Committee as to whereby children are actually playing and searching for condoms and using as balloons. And seeing that the attempt of Black States is noble to assist our communities, my question, why are they not contributing all problems?
I had an NGO. You are going to help them raise funds to extend their offices. The IGs can contribute up their budget. So that they can do that.
I was just about to say to you about how good chapters can go ahead. But I'm resolving now. It's not okay for this chapter. It's not a question. Is it possible for the old Buddha Studio project to draft a proposal on how they see their project continuing? And then they utilize you, you as the mayor, to get it into the minister's door so that you can see about how can you take forward. That would be your proposal to ensure that these projects don't die. The other thing is to both the visual and the engineering institute. Whether you have, or is it possible for you to approach the sector education training authorities in your different areas? I know that there's quite a lot of complaints about those institutions, but they still have a lot of money. They might be the problem might be the human beings surrounding them. But maybe, since you are a very capable propagandist in your own right, Shepard, that's a border reporter. You can assist in ensuring that money success to be able to ensure that these projects don't fail. And I think somehow this sector education and training authority should be utilized to ensure that human resource development really takes place instead of this legacy, which never produces anything sustainable.
We want to reach 50% women engineers in 2030. But that's what I check. Why? Maybe the problem is that many access to universities due to the point system that they are using, or they are still attached, knowing that engineering is for men only. Or that's what I check to the topic. Maybe it's not focused on women.
Thank you. My question is to ask you more comment than a question. I was wondering if Sanchi made a program or would consider a program of mentoring students of engineering students. I asked this question out of the background that you made in the education portfolio, and that is the throughput of students. You have a certain amount going in and registering, but the throughput is much lower than the number that is registering. And we had a presentation made, but I'm forgetting the institution or the organization that is busy mentoring civil engineering students. And besides just providing for bursaries and stuff, they're also mentoring. And they're finding that the food population is much higher. So my question to Santi is, do you have something like that? Would you consider that? Because I think this is one of the crucial areas that we need in our country. Thank you, sir.
Yes, okay. I'm sorry.
Thank you, Chair. My question is you indicated that there's a need for the use of salt in the food. My question is that your people are not going to compromise the atmospheric action of the And the second one is on the issue of outsourcing. Maybe you can clarify today that because outsourcing are only in the industry, but is that outsourcing going to be used to then talk again of the pool of to use a pool to assist municipalities with hangouts and scope of the according to your findings, what are the challenges with regard to the issue of hangouts? Because my understanding is that the challenge here is just the lack of compliance. So maybe you can clarify that further to the end of the day and understand the problem. Then to Blackfish. I think the South African Assistance Act is clear on the social qualifier for the social class. With the understanding that staff are using that act is invited by that act. Maybe if you can just clarify to us which beneficiaries are mostly affected, those who are excluded. Because there are types of beneficiaries that are supposed to benefit after the act. Which one can you identify as a most excluded? Then the second one, the issue of the tribunal. Is it the tribunal which is not effective? Or maybe the processes? Because according to my understanding, the people who suffer most are those who apply for the temporary disability grant, whose applications are supposed to be accompanied by the medical certificate or the medical report. Yes. So according to me, the tribunal is supposed to look at that process and support the going to sign the tribunal. But furthermore, the act provides the right to the applicant to go and present himself or herself to the panel for the panel to take an informed decision. Can it be clarified also in that part so that they understand it?
You're a good MP. You covered. Absolutely good. Let's get a quick response. You don't have to answer all. This is the question. Prioritize. Put together. Because we are giving you an opportunity to go and reflect on your answer later on, so that we can use it in the process. We are going to put in your answers or any additional information you want to give us. It's okay if we after the year of the year, but we need to quickly in the next 48 hours. So that we can do that. So please go ahead, respond to some of those. Let's see what you respond to. Let's start with that then. We can end the order in here.
Chairman, the elections have been ongoing. The right from the start, for instance, when we started the trust, we were able to secure the services of the then Deputy DC, Elroy Africa, and he's now the acting DC. And we were conception, especially of it, and to understand the mindset and the needs of the government, so that we can blame our own thinking as business people and understand what needs to be done on the ground. Give us the training, give us the coaching so that we can become effective. We've also had review sessions on a regular basis as trustees as to where we are standing through, so the communication has been good. The second question we dealt with, the question of age, 20 years service or whatever, I just need to clarify that. That pertains to the people who joined the club, who came out of old people that were close to the time. In some cases, 2 or 3 years from the time, others 5 years from the time. So those were individuals who selected to come out of old people. It's not something that was really forced on people to ask people to volunteer their service. It was open to those who could afford to.
I'll deal with you in 2 points first. We gladly accept the opportunity to submit the proposal, and if that goes through perfect internally, we'll happily comply with that suggestion. To see before the minister, we've raised it with the minister, he's absolutely aware of it, so we certainly like a conversation on that. We're very happy to have a conversation with the teachers. We have had some challenges in these areas with the teachers, and we certainly their mandate and their remit. So if there's an opportunity to have an open conversation with them, we'll gladly use that opportunity. The issue of the skills, what our plans are beyond this, if we're ready to fund this further. I'm a trustee, but I'm also a executive authority of Amity Besides, and we'll put more funding in it. And our response to the request and the proposal we have received has been on condition we will consider it. A couple of conditions. We have to share all this money in order to fund the next initiative. So we will consider funding the next round of it, but under a couple of very serious conditions. The first condition is that this project has to be broader than just on this. There are other corporations who have a desperate attempt, and they have people who are very keen to become available. It'll have to be broader than that. Secondly, there's got to be a coordinated strategy between COFTA and ourselves. Otherwise, we take people out of a productive environment, we put them into an area, and we lead to more frustration. There's got to be a clear governance and how these people are deployed. So on those conditions, that is considered, we will consider putting funding, further funding, shareholder funding, not money after the unplanned change, shareholder funding behind something like this, but there's got to be a coordinated strategy on this. Chair, the next question was why only 7 products and not 9? We took this proposal to all the provinces. We had meetings with all the Director General. Only 7 provinces chose to take it up. KwaZulu-Natal, the Director General, after several invitations, did not turn up or offer any apology for the meeting, and we assumed that there was no interest from KwaZulu-Natal. From Northern Cape, the Northern Cape decided not to take up our offer. So the 2 provinces that stepped away from the offer was the Northern Cape, and for the hotel. So we can force our services on them if people feel there's use for it. Of course they must make use for it. If they choose that there's no value in this offer we've made, then that's also their prerogative. My colleague has answered the issues about the exit strategy, about the 20 years the terms of service. We do ask people to volunteer into the service. People want to go into early retirement to come into the trust, and it's purely on a volunteer basis. Thank you. I hope that answers some of the questions.
Thank you. I think it's going to be a whole lot, but I'm jumping over it rather than. I think in the housing, thing we really need to adopt a similar model to what we've done in local government, where we pair experienced, mostly retired people with youngsters, because there's a lot of work that young people can do on site, as long as they are being overseen as or might be mentored as well. And I don't see a similar model having been put in place with partner housing in the past or currently. So we do need to look at it. In terms of the rural areas, how do we help them? They are cash trapped, as we do agree. But and I do think that COPS is going to have to look at that and involve these 10 or 50 or 40 municipalities that will have to accept will never be self-sustainable. We'll have to be funded by central government, even if we're going to interact with no income in any of those areas, then we do need to look at subsidy. But the issue is we've also added a lot of non-core stuff to local government, which is costing a lot, and huge numbers of admin staff which we possibly don't need. And again, because there's nobody there managing the project and accessing their funding for them, they're not accessing the money available, because there is funding available from these two run projects. You can take part of things. So it's just a matter of almost adopting however many are really in trouble and thinking for them and putting them in place to get them to do this. I think the big drop, as I explained earlier in the numbers, is because the restructuring in 2000 said, well, we don't need all those people. It's economy of scale, let's let them go. We could never let them go. Municipalities to save money generally don't fill posts, and then the posts are empty, they become unfunded after a year, and they disappear off the organogram. We have to reverse that. I'm hoping somebody raised the CISA issue. It's the bane of my life. The LVT term of performing marvelously. You do get money from them for those students that can't get their experience or training to graduate. So that is what affects the throughput very seriously, because they have to have 1 year in industry. So we get money from the local government, each 100 kids a year. It's a drop in the ocean, but it's 100 that get through, and it has started to influence the throughput. What we realize is the phase from graduation to registration as an engineering professional should be handled as a structured training phase with mentors in place. There's not funding for that. It's never been a funded phase. Apprenticeships are funded. You get 90,000 for apprenticeship. I would really love all the help I can from politicians in this room to say, please, Mr. Minister of Higher Education, we've got learnerships, we've got internships, we've got apprenticeships, we have candidateships that are recognized by the CETA as a funded phase. Then we can get older people in the municipalities, in all other sectors of our industry, to train new graduates up to becoming professionally registered. So that's my big plug, because we've written positioning documents. We almost got there, and there's a change of government, and we're starting all over again. So it's something we clearly have to do. So yes, we do mentor. In terms of the 50-50 and the CEOs and equity and so on, we have to face reality. When we started, there were no women in the industry. I was the only woman in 4 or 5 years to graduate as a civil engineer. At a time when 450 were graduating a year. So, yes, we do have young women coming into the industry now, but only young ones. If I'm going to get 50-50 across my entire population, I've got to send all the men home that graduated before we started bringing women in. That's clearly not practical. So it will take time to fill up this imbalance that was in place. So that is the problem. I think we haven't got our classes quite 50-50 now, but they're pretty close, and we're working hard on it. But it's the historical stuff that is the problem. The same thing with the CEOs. We've got to get that skill to get our municipalities back on their feet. If we can put criteria to their appointments and have shadowing and all that sort of thing, we have got to do it. We can't get our municipalities floundering any longer. Other amongst two colleagues, I don't know if you've got anything to add.
Thank you. Thank you, Chair. Just a very brief thing on the issue of the affordability to attract and retain engineering skills at the local municipal government, and especially in rural areas. I think, you know, from the slides that were shown by my colleagues, we're dealing with a supply and demand issue. And we don't need to go into the basics of economics around that. But the reality is that we should, with this challenge, be looking at simplest form of attraction and retention, and with that we can talk monetary, but monetary on its own is not enough. One can go the route of considering structured packages with benefits and make it very attractive, even if you're going to live in the remotest of areas. So it's not impossible. And then, of course, along with that is the empowerment
Because once you've got this person in the position, they must be empowered to trust the officials that they work with and support so that they can deliver what they've been mandated and tasked to do. Otherwise, it becomes a frustrating journey and the person they need. Now, we spoke about the employment and the conditions of employment. I certainly think that it should be a permanent, performance-based type of employment rather than contract-based, because you don't get commitment out of contract people. We've got very good labor relations laws for poor-performing people, and we should be using those now. And I think fundamental to the problem is the grading systems in these local authorities. People will aspire towards roles in management as opposed to technical because the pay is better. So we need to look at equity in those levels. I mean, I know there's lots of technical organizations in the country grappling with that. It's not so difficult. We still do it.
Jefferson, you're going to be proud that I'm going to try and answer two questions from the same time. The Black Cat has been fiercely independent in terms of funding for a long time. It receives no payments from government. And so, with a history of NGOs since 1955, the legacy about the government, and it weathered the huge funding of NGOs post 1994, it has found in its place of ways to continue surviving. Some offices have closed down. So Federation is now an independent NGO with a fair number. But it holds Secretariat of a very important alliance for NASCAR, the National Alliance of Democratic Community and Bipartisan, is able to increase its presence in at least 75 places. Tell them about the relations of participation workers. With the focus on knowledge of women, when we arrived there on the 23rd of November last year, we entered a very, very hostile situation where community leaders allegedly were arrested illegally. That issue is still being resolved. There was a lot of hurt by the local community. We've done monitored the situation both in the safety site, in the prison, in the local community. So any attempt at reintegration, especially chaired or initiated by the municipality involving the police, even the Human Rights Commission trying to get together, to have some community presence was less of hostility. And so our initial intention to have local communities monitor the situation has to be radically altered. The situation right now is that several attempts towards social reintegration have happened. From the pictures you can see that it's going to take a long time. There's the initiatives of the municipality with the Center for Conflict Resolution. We have been working with the Department of the Premier that has a unique directorate associated with it. We are in ongoing talks on that issue. But we agree with the previous comments of the Honourable Member that this is not only the way. And I think that the lesson for us about how to deal with rising crises comes from situations like this where we can develop the baseline of a model of what must happen in order to have some semblance of normalcy returning, hopefully in the short term rather than the long term. I think my colleague Priscilla will answer the other question.
Just with regards to social assistance and who receives it, the beneficiaries, the portfolio implement is correct. The Social Assistance Act governs that. Whoever is eligible for social assistance in terms of that act receives, and they're eligible to apply it. What I made reference to were other groups, other vulnerable groups that are not covered by the Social Assistance Act. And in our view, it's not a comprehensive social assistance system. So we continue to advocate for those who do not receive a benefit in terms of the act to get the act amended so that that actually cater for much wider group. What is going to happen is cabinet approves the definition of disability. The older design of the social development ministry of the design to harmonize the testing tools to assess disability. What that will in fact mean is that people who are currently receiving a temporary disability grant, roundabout figure that was quoted last of about 750,000 people will be excluded from the social assistance system because they have a chronic illness. What are we going to do about people like that?
the chronic illness, not with HIV and AIDS, other diseases, how we can take to make sure that these people don't become disabled and then become a burden in terms of the disability, for example. So we need to see how that happens. The other issue is with regard to the tribunal and the way it operates. Currently, the Act providing Section 18 for a tribunal is established, the Ministry is not able to be appealed. But the tribunal needs to operate within certain regulations, so it is also clear what they use in terms of how they hear an appeal, what documents they will consider. We are not clear about this process because there is no regulation at the same time. Black Pact has made negotiations with the tribunal in extent to cooperate in the KZN area. In terms of operations and process, they relate on that agreement on a couple of times. So we have to really look at that process. Thank you.
Who wants to say something that you will die if you are
dead? Like that, you try your life. I don't think we will die, but with all the skills from say, I've seen the comments you can ask him.
Thank you very much. I just want to say the end of the next day. Voluntary, no money, but I want to make this committee aware. 140 million rand have been paid to CDW. The meeting that they had then was actually be supposed to be a meeting of the citizen nation, because that is their work. Their work is to go out to liaise and advocate on behalf of the community with government when it comes to issues. So, Chair, I hope honorable colleagues and others that we take note of the money problems that we have so that we can assist people of them who are assisting the community. Thank you.
We always have to be careful with running and jumping into conclusions on the basis of 10 minutes increase. The significant information you have to get from that day, you already jumping into conclusions. And never mind from the those guys themselves if they got a chance to respond. So we can't jump into this completely. It's too early. This is why even on what we have heard for this 2 days, we can't jump into any conclusions. I just want to remember and our guests. There's a striking interconnectedness of the things we have heard. The interconnectedness of the in the way in which issues have been problematized. They include, let me start where we belong, with the politics and the governance issues. There are a number of interesting themes that are coming across as we discuss issues right from the beginning with the Ministry of Energy, controllers, and so on. And people issues as part of the problem that we have to deal with. And then institutional issues that relate not only to municipalities themselves, but how government itself has organized itself to be able to carry out its functions and so on. But also the one that strikes me, to go back to the steel issue, is the amount of potential that exists that we hear only part of it is being tapped, but it's insufficiently explored, partly because of perhaps poor governance and organization and mobilization. So these are issues that I imagine that will come back. Funding is also emerging as an important issue. From my favorable subject around renewable energy, with what speed we can fast track those issues. It's not great solar energy panels only in a quarter of a ward in the Western Cape Town or in any one city. So there are issues about funding and very crucial. So the input that we have received about citizen delivery issues today, we will go
and reflect on what we have heard more systematically. We are working with a team of researchers who are going to be going through the submissions that we have submitted to work with us to isolate key issues that are emerging from there, to identify those things around which as a committee we will reach agreement to make recommendations around. We will discuss those recommendations once they have been drafted here, and they will include some of the things that you have said. As a Democrat, and I'm addressing this to our guests, but also to some of us who are sitting here, who already will have had recommendations. Those recommendations that we agree with will go ahead. Those that we don't, doesn't mean they are bad, it's just that for now, they have not been agreed by everybody. So you don't have to have a feed because your pet idea was not taken on board as a recommendation. I'm just saying that in advance as part of the political stress management. That's what I'm talking about. That we know that there are some people whose ideas that are very useful, that can be put into practice quickly and so on. And sometimes perhaps because of our own subsidiousness, you might not be able to see the way I see at the moment. So maybe I'll see it later. So that's the importance of accepting that some of the recommendations we might find that we think they can work quicker and so on. But also we must also be aware that when we go out to speak to people on the ground there, we are going to be dealing with a slightly different dynamic there. And so we must find a way to look at what things you can do to fast track what people expect, really. And at the end of the day, it's enabling Parliament itself, just as the mere exercise of creating this platform is an important one, to look at it from a variety of lenses that we have been looking at it here, from energy, transport, human settlement, cooperative governance, education, and so on. So that when we put those together, we can produce a report that will go to different people for implementation, but also, as one member said, has enriched us already sitting here. So we would like to thank you all for those submissions that you've made to us, and we will follow up some of you to help on the rich experience that you have in working with municipalities in one way or another. So thank you very much. I think dinner is set.
Thank you.